another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeed, indeed. 866-901-ADAM, 866-901-ADAM. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla. Morning there, Brian.
Oh, Bald Brian, yeah, what's happening? Hey, I'm looking at a parking violation in front of me.
Yes, you are.
That's something that you received, Danny?
I brought that to you this morning. I thought you would enjoy that as the start of your day.
What's it for?
Can you get down? It took me for a long time to realize what that was for. Sorry about the whisper. My voice is just getting a little better from Cinco de Mayo.
Let's see.
When you get bored, I'll just tell you if you don't see it.
state. I know. I think they intentionally do that. Well, first off, most of the people that fill these things out, meaning the meter maids, are functionally illiterate. They're not the top of the class.
Right.
I mean, look, my policy. People do that thing where they're like, hey, man, don't blame them. They're just doing their job. No, you chose a chicken-ass job. You chose a job that if you had dignity, you wouldn't do.
Wow.
I would love to live in a world where everyone just held their head so high they didn't take a job as meter maids.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they're like, we would treat you like scabs on a picket line or something. Society, you should be shunned by society. It's easy work. It's easy money. It's great. Your alternative is probably a McDonald's or picking cabbage because you have no discernible skills or education. There's nobody that has anything going on that becomes a meter maid.
Right. I don't think you aspire ever.
You don't aspire.
When you're a young man and they say, what do you want to be? And somebody says astronaut and somebody says policeman and someone says fireman. You don't say meter maid.
But it must be weird having people lunging at you all day just trying to catch you before the pen hits the paper.
Well, that's yesterday's news.
I saw a guy get a ticket while he was sitting in his car. I've seen, like passengers are sitting in the car. There used to be that if you're anywhere near your car,
you're fine.
You are fine. No more. They're riding it.
What do you mean
up.
Yesterday's news is computerized?
Because what they've done, I don't know if this was to give some kind of defense to the meter maid.
Right.
But now they get to say, I'm sorry, it's on. All they've done is they pulled a machine and pushed the on button, and it is now starting to read things from your car.
No
and
front.
There's nothing they can do about it.
No front license plate. There you go.
On a parked car.
Oh, sure.
From 11 a.m. till 4 a.m.
Well, I'll tell you who started.
In a legal parking zone.
I'll tell you who started this trend many, many, many years ago, who was at the vanguard, the tip of the spear of the giving tickets, fixing tickets while the car was parked, was Santa Monica.
The fascist state of Santa Monica?
Not going to do anything about the homeless problem, but if you pay taxes, look out. You are effed in Santa Monica. And the other thing I want to say, again, tips to live your life by, as we were speaking about at the end of the show yesterday.
So far, the best one ever for me, sweatpants with zipper pockets.
Yes, stuff
it's
does
weird.
Not fall
I mean,
out.
He'll tell you the cure to cancer, and it might go right through you, but sweatpants in the gym with a zipper have saved my life. Have gotten me to work. There are my keys.
Wallet, phone, keys, they all fall out when you're running around. But I said yesterday, it doesn't matter what fuel you use in your car, they're all the same. And then you don't have to use the high-octane stuff. Save yourself a few ducats. Next one is, and this isn't mine. A friend of mine told me to do this. When you buy a car, if you buy a new car, you lease a car, leave the dealer plate on until somebody tells you to change it.
Well, I assume this had dealer plates. This is Cerritos Nissan. This is Peter Feist.
Why do you want to leave the dealer plate?
Is the back of your plate, is the back of the car?
I thought about it once I got in.
We should, well, wait a second. You don't know whether you have a license plate or a non-license plate on the back of your car? You know what I mean?
Dude, I don't know my address.
You know where you were last night, though.
Yes, I do.
I want to find out.
Here.
That's
I'm,
how you know.
I'm curious. Someone's got to run out
I
to
was
the
on
parking
Hollywood
lot.
Boulevard.
Someone's got to run out to the parking lot and see whether you have a dealer plate on the back of your car. Because I was driving through said Santa Monica, the People's Republic of Santa Monica, just a few weeks ago, and I saw a motorcycle cop spot me and hook a quick Yui. And when you lock eyes with a motorcycle cop that's coming the other direction, and then you look in your rear view and he's whipped a Yui, you're getting a ticket.
Yep.
I don't know what. And I realized, why is he giving me a ticket? I wasn't speeding. Aha, no front. He could see I had no front license plate. I was driving toward him. But then he whipped around, and then he lost interest because he saw the dealer plate, the cardboard dealer plate, I'm assuming, and said, well, this guy hasn't got his plates yet. Now, my plates are in the trunk of my car. I'm not putting them on until I get a ticket. The deal is if you keep the dealer plates on your car, well, you're supposed to change them in 2 months, but they don't know when you got your car.
Right.
So unless you're driving a 69 Falcon,
right,
you can leave the crap on there for up to a year or so. If you don't get pulled over, you won't get a ticket driving through the intersection with the camera on it, and you probably won't get the chicken ass no front license plate
that
one.
That saved me with the GTO. It had plates on it that were from Michigan, and they said 1967 on it. That's all it said.
Right.
No tags. And I think the L.A. police thought they were some kind of collectible, because they have a collectible tag in California.
Right.
Car could be considered an antique and be
Historic cars, yeah.
So I think the cops thought of that because I never got pulled over. So I never registered it in California. The problem is, now that it was stolen and I have it back, I have no paperwork and no proof that it was ever in California, and I still can't drive it.
Well, good news.
My beautiful Oral Shribe paint job is sitting in my garage.
You can't drive the goat. Well, let's see. I want to get Kyle or somebody to go out to the parking lot and find out what's on the back of your car. I'm curious if you can get a ticket for no front license plate if you have the cardboard. When I say dealer plates, I just mean the cardboard Cerritos Dodge one or whatever, wherever you bought the vehicle.
Cerritos Nissan.
There you go.
Place.
There you go. Also, T.
Yeah.
Saw you on a TV water cooler last night with Dave Coulier.
Yeah, nice guy.
And Henry Winkler. Speaking of nice guys.
Yeah, I brought you up.
You did.
I said,
I said that Henry said
that he was the nicest guy, and he remains the there's nobody nicer than Henry Winkler.
Well, as we always talk about the deserved reputation. You know what I mean? Look. You always hear that Oliver Stone is a nutcase. You hear he's temperamental. You hear he's difficult. Should you have any reason not to believe that? Of course he's a nutcase. Of course he's temperamental. Of course he's difficult. I like most of his movies, but I'm sure he deserves every ounce of that reputation. And again, we want to live in a society where people go, hey, man, you don't know Oliver Stone. Hey, man, people could just be talking. Hey, man. Well, if we don't punish Oliver Stone on sort of hearsay, then we can't praise Henry Winkler on hearsay. You understand? It's a two-way street. It's got to be one or the other.
Right. It's the exact example of if there's no bad, there's no good.
Right.
If there's no crummy guys to treat Teresa like crap, then there's no wonderful men like me to treat her as a queen.
If Winkler hadn't used rough trade on her last night after the show, there'd be... What happened?
Did you see Henry Winkler's impassioned plea to the public that Teresa's single? He looks at the camera what an embarrassing moment.
I think my kids started screaming, sensing daddy was uncomfortable, and I ran into the next room.
Then during the commercial, he was like, why don't you go on J-Date? And I tried to explain to him, I'm way too famous. Way too famous.
I would hop on all over the place this morning, but I've now taken to throwing my kids around like their horseshoes onto my bed. I keep standing further and further away. I am launching those kids into a pyramid of pillows every night, and they're going berserk.
Much more fun game than what comes next.
What's the next one?
They reverse it.
They throw you.
And they rot. No, they dive from the bed to you and then say, back up one more step, Daddy. Pretty soon you're really far and you're catching them like they used to jump face to face and you'd catch them right in front of your face.
Right.
By the time they're done figuring out they're going to get hurt one day, you're getting them about 4 inches off the ground.
They
reverse that game on you.
Here's all I hope. I don't know what percentage of boys and girls and how it varies, and you guys can tell me what you think. There is what I call the thrill-seeking gene. There is the daredevil gene. My nephews have it. At least two out of the three of my nephews have it. They break their arms every other week because they're going nuts on skateboards or jumping out of trees. They want to get on a trampoline. They want to go nuts. I remember as a kid, you find me a roof and find me a swimming pool, I will get up onto that roof and I'll go into the neighbor's pool. When I was in the fifth and sixth grade, I would climb up to the roof of three-story apartment buildings that weren't the same apartment that had the pool. You had to clear a back fence and about 6 feet of asphalt, and then you got to the pool.
Yeah.
And then I would have to do a flip off of the roof into the pool.
Wow, that's extra. That's a bonus one.
I had a very strong daredevil gene. I remember the feeling well. I thank Christ I don't have it anymore, but I would stand on the edge of this building and I would think, I'm not going anywhere until I do a flip. But the flip was over concrete into a pool that was shaped like a kidney bean. It's nuts. I would die if my kid did that. And then then you get your license and now it's on, baby.
Right.
I mean, I spent all my high school years trying to catch air in my dad's 76 Volkswagen Rabbit. I mean, the whole idea was to get all four tires off the ground. If I could find those railroad tracks over by Chandler, I could catch a little air. I thought every kid who got a car just immediately went out stunt driving. I didn't realize until I got into the civilized world and started hanging out with normal guys that went to college and stuff. They drive slowly. They drive cautiously. I talk to these guys now. Like, these are the guys I met later on in life, the guys who write TV shows and work on projects and things like that. And they're like, I don't much care for driving. I was never very good at it. I always wanted my friends to drive because I didn't enjoy it. I'm just not good at it. I'm not coordinated. Like, you're what, dude? You weren't pulling e-brakes? No, I couldn't handle that. You know, so there's guys, I don't want to get near a motorcycle. They're hard. They're dangerous. I'd kill myself. I can barely drive a car. I didn't know there were those guys out there. Every guy I knew, with the exception of Ray, by the way, was a maniac on the road. Ray was a maniac off the road and in the passenger seat. Ray was the guy who I picked up to go riding my motorcycle, and he came down from his mom's apartment barefoot. And I said, Ray, it's 2 in the morning, and it's the middle of winter, and we're heading up Laurel Canyon. He said, I know. I said, don't you want to put some shoes on? I'm cool. And I would ride him. He'd be on the back of my motorcycle barefoot. He'd be drinking a beer on the back of my buddy Chris's motorcycle, and he'd pop the clutch, and Ray would fly off the back of the motorcycle. But Ray drove like a grandmother. Everyone else drove like a maniac with Brodies and e-brakes and donuts and whatever. And I realized they all had the thrill-seeking gene. Now, my nephews have the thrill-seeking gene, but not all boys have this. Maybe 50% of them have it.
Was that news to you?
that not everyone had
it? You weren't everyone in that sense?
I was always going to be the top of the leaderboard. If there was something that somebody wasn't going to try, I was going to try it.
Right. Well, that's kind of an ego thing.
But they all wanted to do it, too.
They all wanted to, and that's the point. Until I'm 47 now and still do ridiculous things that wind me up in the emergency room or someone else in the emergency room or some terrible thing. And I always thought that everybody was just like me and somehow too afraid to let it out, afraid they'd get fired, afraid nobody would like them, afraid they'd get in a fight, whatever it was. And within the last maybe 3 or 4 years is the first time I realized people don't want to act like you at all. There are people who just want to get by and say hi in the hallway and don't want to do anything dangerous.
That's me. I feel that life provides me so much anxiety. It just, I don't need
to. Chew ass.
See, maybe that's why I do it. Real life is full of so much anxiety. If I'm trying to jump a motorcycle over some cars.
Here's what I do as a stunt. I take off my seatbelt as I pull out of the driveway. So I get to the curb and then I put back on.
You're a scary kid.
By the way, update on Danny's vehicle. No front plate. That much we knew. You do have a California license plate on the back. Yeah. That is why you don't have the dealer plates. That's why you got. Because if you can't get a ticket for no front license plate if you don't have a license plate.
Right.
You have a cardboard license plate. It hasn't been issued to you yet. So, that's why you got the ticket, and your interior light is on, and there's a hooker suffocating at night. The interior light is on, which I noticed as well.
Wait a minute. Why is the hooker suffocating?
Evidently, you didn't crack the window again, Danny. You know, we've spoken about that.
She's not an armless hooker.
She could have cracked
it
herself.
But you have power windows, and the keys aren't in.
She was bound and gagged.
The keys are always. Oh, no, I have the keys.
Yeah, you better go give her. You better go freshen her up.
Why wouldn't your battery be drained if the light was on?
Because I've been here 5 minutes.
And it takes up nothing, and it's going to take all day. But you may want to rectify that. The point is I pray to holy Christ my kids don't have my daredevil gene or some of my other kids, because, like I said, when everyone I know got their driver's license, they literally went stunt driving.
Right.
That was it. Threw the car in reverse and floored it and then whipped it around. Drove down the side streets with the lights off, screaming, woo! You know, the more people that were in the car, the crazier they drove. I hope I didn't pass that one along to the kids.
I think you'll love this. I've got maybe five what I think to be wonderful things I did on the radio. They just came to me and they worked out great. And one was called karaoke. And we had this eight-twist ramp to get up to the parking structure in the Hancock building. And you would get...
This is in Chicago.
Yeah. And a listener would get in my car with their cell phone, and we'd be at the top of the ramp, and they'd try and sing a song, anything from Happy Birthday to You to one of the current songs that people played. And then I would punch it. And if they could sing the song all the way down the ramp without screaming, they won. And no one ever made it. No one. One time, another dish shiny, the guy that got me started in this business, Brandmeier, mm-hmm. said he could do it. Now, I would crash this car on purpose. I'd uh-huh. smash it into the side of the ramp because it was concrete in a circle and sparks would fly, right. but you wouldn't go anywhere.
Right.
And people would just freak because you're way high in the air.
Right.
But Brandmeier had heard me do it so many times that he said, I could do it. And it was kind of cavalier about it. And I said, no, you couldn't. You'd scream like a bitch. I said, no, I wouldn't. So we go down the ramp. And that by itself, karaoke, was a wonderful bit because I did other stuff with it. But this one time, so he gets in my car and he's fully prepared. I don't even go that fast. I go fast enough to make him think I'm going fast, but I'm not really.
Right.
I've got it. And he's singing and looking at me. And he's every now and again, he's a little jostled, but he never breaks. And we get right to the bottom and turn around and there's a lady with a baby carriage, which I smash into and run over. And he
landed.
Lips. It's Gretchen. Gretchen and the baby carriage. He went into cardiac arrest, man. He started screaming. Oh, my God.
Like the Untouchables.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
It was the most amazing shriek I've ever heard from a grown man in my whole life when we hit that baby carriage. And Gretchen, who can be playful at times, really took her part. She's just screaming, my baby. He's like, I'm just shy of a dingo in my baby.
Hence the terrified wife, Taylor.
It was awesome. No, hence the terrified disc jockey.
I didn't know. The plant. Never thought of that. All right, we need to take ourselves a break.
Yeah, I got a hooker. On
Danny needs to
feed his hooker.
Needs to feed his hooker and shut his dome light off.
She gets scared.
Your dome light being on sounds like you have an idea. Just sounds like a sort of euphemism for I'm sitting here. Bonaducci's got his dome light on the whole time. Finally, it's bugging me. I want to know what's on his mind.
Slowly draining his battery.
866-901-ADAM is the phone number. Let's talk about, let's keep it on Johnny Law. This time, Paris Hilton. 45 days in the Hooskow. Claims she's innocent. What do you think? And what have you been accused of that you didn't do? And did you ever do time for something you didn't do? I mean, even a few days. Maybe you took one for a friend. Mm. I'm sure there are plenty of people have done a few days here and there
for other people.
He was?
For a weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
Good times. The black one?
No, my biological dad, my Jewish dad.
A Jewish dad.
Yeah.
You had a black dad and a Jewish dad. Yeah. One of them did time.
Yeah.
And it was a Jew.
I wonder why you're confused. And I'll tell you about a guy that took one for the team and did my time.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
All right, 866-901-ADAM, next.
Here's what's coming up this morning on the Adam Carolla Show with program director Jack Silver.
What up, peeps? Y'all ready to raise the roof on this mofo? From the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, we got Larry the Cable Guy, Judge Hatchett, and from last year's American Idol, Elliot Yameen. Seriously? Larry the Cable Guy, a TV judge, and a loser from last year's American Idol. At this point, Mike August isn't even trying to outbook himself. Please.
Thanks, Jack. Call 866-901-ADAM, Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci on the Adam Carolla Show.
Geter done. Saw Larry the Cable Guy. We're hanging out in the blue states, but saw the guy on 60 Minutes, for the love of Christ, tooling around his 2-billion-acre ranch on his tractor. You know you've arrived. It's actually rich man, poor man. When you use a vehicle to get around your property other than a vehicle. I mean, when you're using Well, the poor man part is when you're in one of those LARC things, one of those little motorized vehicles or whatever. But when you have to get in a golf cart so you can get down to a certain part of your property. Bonaducci, what is going on with you and the Velcro?
I'm sorry, man. I didn't think you could hear it.
I didn't think I could hear it.
He's opening up his wallet to pay the hooker. What you hear?
Why would I pay her? She suffocated. I robbed her.
Now, what is that? Some kind of carpal tunnel?
It's like for tennis elbow.
Ah.
I hit a guy in Phoenix, and I hit him so hard it hurt me.
Just to watch him die? Wait a minute.
Wait. Yeah.
That's Memphis, I think. And then Reno.
Reno.
Right. And, yeah, I always wonder what that thing is, you know, that band. You see it for the, it's for tennis elbow.
Yeah, but it actually works.
It does.
Yeah.
How about using some of Evel Knievel's magnets? I feel like you'd be a good candidate for anything Evel Knievel might use.
Well, I think a lot of things would stick to me. I got a lot of metal going on.
All right, we're talking about taking a fall for somebody being falsely imprisoned or accused. Poor Paris Hilton, and by the way, can anyone muster 1 ounce of sympathy for Paris Hilton? And the thing that's funny is celebrities are horrible people and mostly blowhards and insincere, but the one thing you can say about celebrities is they stick together. When they... You know, when Alec Baldwin tees off on his kid, they go to other celebrities on the red carpet and they talk to his celebrity buddies. It's always, you know, I'm pulling really hard for Alec right now. I know it's a tough time and I'm praying for him. And this is someone who's never even worked with him. You know what I mean? Right. Nobody has the huevos in Hollywood to go, that guy's a jackass. I can't believe he spoke to his kid that way. Well, everyone but Bonaducci.
Right. Who just said that... Let's see, yesterday when they were talking about Paris Hilton, what should I do yesterday?
Scarborough.
No, I did a different one. Neil Cabuto. On right. MS, yeah. And they said, do you think that she's being treated unfairly because she's a celebrity? And I've seen it work both ways. I've seen celebrities get off lightly because they're
right.
celebrities.
Right.
And I've seen them be made a lesson of
right.
by giving a hard time.
They overcompensate.
And I said... I hate this because I get mail the second I open my mouth and don't think about what I'm saying. I just want to make a point, and I want to make it so big you can't miss what the small point was. So I said, if the judge had said to me she was driving on a suspended license, so we're going to behead Paris Hilton, I'd think, that's fair.
Mm.
I got so yelled at by the lady from Star Magazine, and everybody wants to use me as an example, which is a bad call, because that's when I killed them. That's when I kicked their ass, because they go, how can you say that? You used to do that all the time. And I said, lady, at any time, up until about 1992, if a judge said to me, hey, we're going to behead you, I would think, totally fair.
Mm.
You know, I never backed myself up like I didn't deserve it. The only two words in the English language I have never spoken, not guilty. You know, I did it. Beat me. Whatever you're going to do, get it over with.
Speaking of B-head, it's about time for another video. Yeah. But point is this. Nobody feels sorry for her. And even the celebrities, when they go talk to the crew from Dancing from the Stars, like, hey, baby, you shouldn't have done it if you didn't want to. Come on. Joey Fatone was making fun of her, going, you get a driver. Your license is suspended. Well, like I said, celebrities, one thing they do is stick together. That's about the only thing they do well, stick up for each other. And they wouldn't even stick up for her.
Yeah, she has almost no redeeming value. She's the last person on earth that you can safely make fun of. There's nothing to really root for about her.
Right. And
she's human.
Thus, everyone seems to be happy she's going to be doing time. And again, it's one of those things where, look, even if she doesn't, I'm sure she's circled the globe loaded. I mean, when I'm just doing the clubbing math, going out partying, going out clubbing, what do you think you're doing, drinking club sodas? Right. Matter of fact, clubs shouldn't even be in club soda.
Right.
He has no place in a club. You're out drinking, and you're going to after-hours clubs, and this is not Saturday nights. This is Wednesday night. This
right.
is
yeah.
Monday night. This is 5 to 6 nights a week, and I'm being generous here. It's probably 7 nights a week. You're out partying, you're out clubbing, and then you're driving home down the Sunset Strip. I'm sure she's had more lit miles than Jan Michael Vincent has compiled in his lifetime.
No, he doesn't have a car.
And she got popped.
Well, here's what she said yesterday, that she gets pulled over more than other people,
right.
and it's unfair. She also went on to say that they just hit on her and asked for her phone
yeah.
number.
Right.
But the fact is, of course she gets pulled over more than other people. She's a criminal. The crime is a vehicle crime. the punishment was you can't drive and you're famous.
Right.
You might as well write criminal on your forehead.
Now, let me explain, and I'll tell you the part that no one talks about. They sort of allude to it, but they don't really ever talk about it. And I can tell you now, I'll tell you personally, and I'm not proud of it, but I'll tell you the change that has happened in me over the years. When you grow up in sort of poverty and you grow up as just, you know, a bad student in a bad school with poor parents, and people say, hey, you get to the back of the line. Go to the back of the line. You have to wait till you got here late. You have to wait for everyone else. You hang your head and you walk to the back of the line and there you stand. You will do many things that you wouldn't dream of doing. You know, I used to have to pay my phone bill in person and pay my electric bill in person. Everything when you're poor, when you're nobody, when you're zero, it's one big, hey, up, get to the back of the line. Your life is one big goddamn line.
Right.
It's go down to the DMV and stand in line. Go get your thing renewed. You don't have an assistant that's going to go down there and do whatever. Everything is one big line. You want to save yourself $10 on a video game? Show up to the store before it opens and get in line and then rush in and try to save yourself $10. I grew up with that. Even me, who had about 30 years of get to the back of the line like nobody you have ever heard before, even I have outgrown it now with my newish celebrity. Right. I go to a place now and they go, hey, get to the back of the line. And I go, I'm splitting. And I leave. I've done it a million times for events and things where the security guy didn't recognize you. And it's like, sorry, sir, you're not getting into the event. You got to go wait and then whatever. And I went, all right. And I just turn around and leave. I just leave. I'll go. I was supposed to go to Chicago to do Jenny Jones a million years ago. They're supposed to have a first class ticket for me. I walked up the counter and they're like, no, we got a coach ticket. I said, it's supposed to be first class. I said, well, we got coach. And I said, oh, good. And I just turned around and started to head home. Unfortunately, they tackled me and gave me a first class ticket. I really want to go home. Point is when you grew up in that, see, when you're Paris Hilton, you grew up in it. Even I been able to abandon it. Even I now have a horrible attitude. I didn't grow up near that. She grew up in the vortex of that. So when you tell a poor person and you tell a blue collar person and a hardworking and a middle class and whatever the term is for the guy who gets in the back line, hey, buddy, you don't drive for 6 months. And if you do and you get stopped, you may not drive forever. That person listens because they are used to listening to what people have to tell them. You tell Paris Hilton, get to the back of the line, she makes a cell call and walks to the front of the line,
right,
or goes home or does whatever, or says, fine, I'll have them open the store during the off hours and I'll shop. And by the way, you're fired. You can't, so then what happens, and this is what happens.
Oprah in Paris?
Yes.
Yeah.
She went to a store when it was closed and she made a big deal out of it. Like they did something wrong.
This is what happens in society. Now, the only place where everything gets equaled out again is on the road. It's not equaled out in any other facet of society. Sure, we all go to the airport. She gets on a private jet and we get on Alaskan Airlines in a coach and that's where we'll stay. It's not equal anywhere but on the road, and they can't adjust. The cop pulls them over, and they want to know what the problem is. It's like your lights weren't on, your seatbelt wasn't on, you're swerving, and you have a pony keg on the roof of your car, by the way,
right,
with a silly straw going through the sunroof.
Don't and do that like, with your kids. Your wife will be really mad. I'm not kidding you.
And they're like, why? What's the deal? And then they go, hey, you can't drive for 6 months. You have a suspended license. And they go, okay. That's not for me. That's for other people. So right. In a way, we sort of create this person that feels like they're impervious to whatever. And that's really what their cry is. They don't even know it. They can't feel it. It just feels like they're being wrongfully persecuted or prosecuted because they never had to get into the back of the line. We're talking about taking the fall. And for some reason, we've sort of morphed into taking it for other people. Dennis?
Yes.
You took the fall for your wife?
Now ex-wife, go figure.
But, what happened?
I was building log homes all over the country, and I was doing some in North Carolina at the time. And she wrote a check for a vehicle that, of course, bounced, and I knew nothing about it until a month and a half when I came back. And, I had two children, so there's no way I was going to let her go. So I went up to the public defender and said, I don't care, I'll do this, you know. And I thought it was only going to be like 30, 60 days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Went in front of the judge, and he gave me 3 years.
3 years for a bounced check.
Well, it was $32,000. It was for a brand new Mountaineer.
So you you did how long in the joint?
A year.
So you did 1 year because your wife wrote a bad check, essentially. I mean, for $32,000, but a bad check.
Yes, and then 2-3 years later, I got out and was reactivated to the Army to Kuwait, and she found somebody else. So, you know, it was comical, and you know, that's been 7 years ago. So,
would it be bad? Well, of course, it'd be bad. But just think in the darkest recesses of your heart. You can say, of course, it would be bad, Danny, and think something else if you want. We won't be able to tell. If a guy takes the fall for his wife and does 3 years and afterwards goes and serves his country and he comes back and the wife he has served the time for was cheating on him while he was in the desert, he should be able to shoot her in the head.
Yeah.
I had some friends who actually thought about that, Danny.
Well, I'm really happy that Carole agreed, because I really think that Carole is dangerously
I would like certain guidelines. Absolutely. Which is, give me that M16, let me holler. Okay, now I'll put two bullets in the clip. Now, your wife gets an 8 Mississippi head start on you, and you have to drink a 16-ounce, or you have to drink a Bud Tallboy. She gets an 8 Mississippi head start on you. She gets start running. You, in that 8 Mississippi, have to chug a 16-ounce Bud Tallboy. You get two bullets. She can run Serpentine.
Here's what's sad.
Or she can stand there and bang with you.
I have questions. Can you take a turn?
Yeah, she can run whatever direction she wants.
If you're at your front door and you live at the corner, she can take a hard right and then another hard right.
I don't know the topography of Dennis's actual, you know, environment, but yes, I would say she could, if there's a hedge, but it can't be higher than 4 foot.
All right. Hold on. I'm with you up until he serves the time for the woman.
Wait,
okay?
Right. Yes.
And he gets out and she's cheated.
Right.
Then a tall boy in 8 seconds.
Right.
He gets out, goes and serves his country, comes back. We get a small boy and a 4 Mississippi.
12-ouncer and a 4 Mississippi.
Yeah.
Wait, before we shoot Dennis's ex-wife in the head.
Well,
don't
if
you
can get her. She's serpentine.
I mean,
what's
the
problem with that, Adam?
Yeah.
A Marine will hit anything that's moving, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Semper Fi. Carry on, my friend.
I appreciate that, but didn't you notice she had a new car and wonder where she got the money?
No, because they'd already repossessed it because the bounce checked by then.
They'd already taken it back.
So that happened before you knew her.
All right, but Dennis, you did some soul searching in the joint, and you've come out a different man.
Oh yeah, like I said, it's been 7 years ago, and I'm still single, but life is good.
All right, Dennis, good times.
Good times.
Wow. Yeah.
A year.
Yeah.
No, 3 years.
Well, he got three, and he did one.
That's what I did the math on Paris.
But then off to the joint. He went after that. All right, let's see. John.
That guy's from Petaluma, by the way, near where my dad's from, who did time for protesting.
Protesting?
Yeah, U.S. intervention in El Salvador. That was a big
cause.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
It is one of these things where it's like, what the hell was that Jewish guy doing time for? And then it turns out he was
protesting. My stepfather, who was black, would get pulled over all the time.
Really?
All the time, yes. But he was very, very polite to cops, and I never recall him getting a ticket.
You want to be polite. If they're racial profiling at the time, you want to make sure you're polite.
Yeah.
Well, we never really got into it, but the cops and the MacArthur Park thing out here in Los Angeles and the rubber bullets and all that kind of stuff. I usually take the cops' side, but I do it with this sort of asterisk or caveat or whatever it is, which is, cops are people, and a guy who's holding a gun that fires rubber bullets, if you stomp on his foot, is going to shoot you with the rubber bullet.
Yeah.
He shouldn't. He's a cop. He's not supposed to have his emotions and his anger and his whatever. But if he sees a camera in his face and he sees a sign that says, I smell bacon, and somebody chucks a pomegranate at him, he's going to open up. That's the way it goes. And the lesson for everybody is not what did LAPD do wrong, which is what we always want to know, which is, why are you arguing? When a guy in a horse and a bullhorn dressed in a black jumpsuit wearing a hockey helmet says it's time to disperse, then it's time to disperse.
Right.
You can argue about it later. I don't say it's right. Maybe it wasn't time to disperse. The problem is he's got the rubber bullets in the horse, and he's yelling, it's time to disperse.
What they're saying is they were saying to disperse, but they were saying it in English, and most of the crowd was Spanish-speaking.
Oh, cry me a river, baby.
I'm just giving you the other side.
I guess we need, like, bilingual bullhorns now.
Okay, see, luckily for this conversation, I've been arrested
in Mexico. By the way, disperse is one of those big words where I'm sure they just put an O at the end of it and rip those off. It's okay. Dispersio or something.
I think it is.
They got all the big ones.
I think I caught that in Mexico.
Oh, words like dictionary.
Okay.
Just put an O on the end of it. Come on, how lazy and drunk do you have to be as a society just to put an O at the letter R? Now, they'll do their own thes and wheres and hows and huhs. Those they'll make up. But the big words, they'll just go, screw it. Let's put an O at the end of it.
Yeah, but I think their language might be older than ours, so I think we did it.
How dare you invade my world with your truth, Bonaducci.
I'm sorry about that. But I will tell you, having
don't
been
contradict
to jail in several different countries,
yes.
I can tell you the best and worst places to go to jail, at least on small crimes. And I will tell you this. I do not speak Spanish. You put a guy in a uniform with a gun yelling anything while his horse is spinning around to make room. I'm going to dispersio right then, mucho quico.
I've read the manifestio. Maybe there's another O in that. Look, I saw Planet of the Apes. Those apes weren't saying anything. They're on horsebacks, and they had nets, and they're rounding up human beings. You run. You weren't standing there going, hey, what do the apes want? No, they're coming at you. You go the other way. When a whole bunch of guys dressed in riot gear start locking arms and walking toward you with a bullhorn, you walk the other way. You don't walk at them and go, hey, man, what's up? I've seen so many people get the crap beat out of them by doing that thing where the cop's yelling, get down on the ground. And it's like, what? I didn't do it. Get down on the ground. You're flopping. You're flailing your arms around. Your shirt's off and tucked in your back pocket. And your arms are flying around and you're walking at the guy. Get down on the ground.
There are. I'm not telling you because the cops, you know, it's not the most dangerous job in the world, which is actually professional fishermen is the most dangerous job in the world. But, you know, you do get shot, and you've seen them on those tapes, just walking up and saying, can I see your license, please?
Yeah.
When a cop pulls me over, I lock my hands at 10 and 2 on the on the wheel. I don't move my head to look at him, and I shout, what do you want me to do with my hands? Where would you like me to keep my hands?
And then you get shot.
Sounds like prom.
No, so I mean, I've just had, you know, I used to be
It's true. The best way to avoid a ticket is like, officer, I'm going to go to my glove box now. That's where my registration is. If you allow me, I'll reach over there and do it. Look, when the cops tell you to dispersio, hit the bricks O and dispersio, that's all. I'm not saying they didn't overreact. They did overreact. But I saw film of a lot of guys like walking toward the cops while the cops were saying disperse. We got to find out what disperse is in Spanish. All right, let's see. John?
Hey, Adam.
What's your story, brada?
Hey, real quick, Danny, Teresa, hello.
Hi.
Hey, Danny, I loved your Black Belt magazine article years ago. I'm probably dating myself how long I've actually known you.
Oh, I'd like to see that picture. They got some great pictures.
That's probably 25 years ago.
He looked fantastic.
Thanks, man.
He still does.
I'm actually in better shape than that now.
Yeah,
and not internally. Internally, I'm a train wreck. But thank you.
His organs have dispersioed all over his body. What do you got, John?
Hey, so years ago, I was still in the service. I'd been in about 13 years, been studying, teaching martial arts for a number of years. I was bouncing at the bar, and these two guys were trying to steal beer out of the bar, and I caught them and just, look, you know, put the beers down. The one guy was really cool. The other guy, you know, takes the swing, and I move out of the way and just say, you know, you need to stop, and he keeps trying. So one thing leads to another. Danny, I was really nice.
I believe
you. And you know what that means as a martial artist. You know, you're not trying to hurt the guy.
I heard Swayze lay it all out in Roadhouse. It's time to be nice until it's time not to be nice.
That's right. That's all I need to know.
That and pain don't hurt were the two things I learned from watching that movie. Guys with helicopters were evil. Yeah, sorry.
Pain makes believers, Adam.
That's right.
So it was time to not be nice, and all I did was break the kid's nose and restrain him. Okay, I was very nice.
Uh-huh.
2 years later, it goes to arbitration, and I'm found guilty of excessive force.
Uh-huh.
$2,500 later to fix the kid's nose. And, of course, it comes out in the whole arbitration that, you know, he had a history of violence, which, of course, was inadmissible. He jumped out of a parked car to punch somebody standing on the corner.
I know. That inadmissible part, that part where we have tapes of Nicole Brown Simpson screaming at the 911 operator, he's going to kill me from 2 months earlier. Neither here nor there. No. Really? That's all I need to know. That's all I need to hear.
Exactly.
So, John, did you actually have to do any time?
I didn't have to do any time, but I had to leave the company that I was working part-time at.
All right.
You know what's weird on that?
Part-time from a bouncing gig, cry me a river.
With that inadmissible stuff that sometimes drives me crazy, say 2 months ago, and we're going to go domestic violence here.
Uh-huh.
Say 2 months ago, you watched me just beat the bejesus out of Teresa. She says something terrible to me, and I lose control and go crack right in front of you, right in front of all of you. She hasn't pressed charges.
Right.
3 months later, she's all beat up and said, Danny, beat me up again. They won't let you come in as witnesses. The fact that you've seen me hit Teresa once doesn't mean I did it again.
Mm.
It's inadmissible. It's hearsay.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that awkward and weird?
I know, because to me, the history is the only thing we need to know. If I'm accusing you of your dog biting me, all I need to know is have the mailman, the neighbor, and the sparklets guy come up and say, I got bit by the dog,
what
too.
What about testimony that goes to character? Like, I know Danny, and he's always been violent.
I get a lot of that.
That's
admissible.
I thought you were just talking.
That was a hypothetical.
I get a lot of that.
It's dispersion or dispersio or dispersion. I mean, we're getting back to our disperse.
Oh, right.
Our disperse. Yeah, look, like I said, a guy with a bullhorn, a horse dressed in a hockey outfit coming at you, firing rubber bullets and waving around a baton, cuts through all language barriers. You go the other direction. Brian's mad because I threw a pen at him.
I've got like five different answers, all having the root of disperse, so yes.
Of course. I told you, the big words they steal from us. Just like they took our jobs. All right, we need to take a break.
Steal their state.
Oh, look, again, you over there with the truth. Getting mired in the truth.
See, the difference is that I don't mind we stole their state.
Yeah.
I stole it and I'm damn proud of it.
Hey.
I think we should steal more of it. Hey. I think we should steal down to about Ensenada.
Tell you what, yeah, Tijuana looking mighty good. They got those fish tacos over there in Ensenada and some nice beach. We've effed up our beach, but they got some beautiful beach over there.
A million kilowatt or whatever it is radio station there with no license.
Ooh.
You could broadcast almost worldwide from TJ.
Teresa could go FM Baja California. She could do that.
Yeah, she'd do that.
And I could be like, hey, good morning, hombres. We got a 50,000 watt flame. Hey, Danny, another tequiza.
Pronto, senor.
They don't go through a lot of tequis over there, but we'll take a break. I want to keep this going because we got a guy who took a fall for Hell's Angel friend. Also, another guy got 3 years for holding the guy's joint. Who did you take a fall for? We'll keep it going. 866-901-ADAM.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Teresa Strasser, and Danny Bonaducci. Adam wants to know who you've taken a fall for. Did you end up in the joint because you were holding someone else's joint? Call 866-901-ADAM. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Mark over here from Phoenix got 3 years for holding the guy's joint, ironically. Mark?
Hey, how you doing?
What's the story, brada?
All right, here it is. I was working in a nightclub in 97. And by the time you get out of the nightclub, the streets are, you know, all the bar rushes, you know, the people on traffic and leaving the bars is gone and the traffic's quieted down. I get pulled over for no license plate illuminator light.
Oh.
Get that fixed. Turned in the ticket, and about 3 weeks later, I could buy the right light bulb for the right model and the right year and everything. Get pulled over about 3 weeks later for too bright of light to the rear for that license plate illuminator.
Really? So it needed a 2-watt bulb, and you got a 4-watt bulb.
I got the exact bulb that the model called for.
Really? And I've never heard of her. I thought I've heard of all the chicken-ass tickets on the planet. I've never heard of too well illuminated a license plate.
They called it bright light to the rear.
Uh-huh.
Teresa's got one.
Yeah.
So then how did you end up getting busted?
Okay, so I got the other ticket for the no light, no illuminator,
right,
still hanging out there. He pulls me out of the car, does the pat down, and at work I had been given a joint earlier that night in my tip jar, and I'd forgotten about it. And not actually, you know, I'm up against the car for possession of, narcotics.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't take a plea, took it to trial because it wouldn't mind. Lost and did 3 years.
3 years.
Jeez.
And in Arizona, you do 85%. So that was 2 years, 9 months, and 10 days in Yuma, Arizona. The a-hole of the world.
I have to say, first off, Mark, I would never let this go. I would pull a Billy Jack. I would go down to the courthouse with a explosive vest strapped to me 10 years later and look for everybody who did this to me. I took a joint through the McCarran Airport over there in Vegas not too long ago, maybe a couple of years ago, and I'll tell you why I did it. I was at somebody's bachelor party or somebody's something. I don't remember where it was or what the hell I was doing in Vegas, but some guy gave me a big doobie. There's always that one guy that, you know, the one guy who pays in drugs.
Yep.
I miss that guy. It's like, hey, nice job handling the bags. Here's a Quaalude. So this guy gives
me. I do miss that guy.
This guy gives me a big doobie. And everyone's smoking so much weed and drinking so much, it's hardly worth sparking that baby up that night. But we have an early flight the next morning, so I get up hungover the next morning, and I'm staring at this big doobie that's sitting in the bathroom, and I think, I don't smoke much weed anymore, occasionally, just to look cool, but I really, I drink the red wine, but I thought, oh, I better flush this doobie down the toilet, and then I thought, this is a good doobie, doobie-doobie-doo. I said, I'm not going to disperse yo on this dubio. I'm going to bring this back to L.A., oh. And I thought, no, you can't go through the airport with this doobie. And then I started to get angry. I thought, wait a minute. I'm 40 years old. I pay an S-load in taxes. I'm not a criminal. I'm not a terrorist. I'm not even smoking this joint. I'm just bringing it home just because I don't want to flush anything that's worth. Look, if I had a bowel movement that was worth $20, I wouldn't flush it. It would just sit there in the toilet. I got something that's worth $20 and you're asking me to toss it in the garbage or flush it down the toilet. Plus, someone may come over to my house and want to smoke this joint. Right. I'm bringing this joint home. And, you know, people get weird, but it's like, this was a gift. People get weird with that. Sure. Anything. I don't care if it's drugs. I don't care if it's a bear trap. I don't care if it's pubic lice. If it's a gift, it's a gift.
Sentimental.
It was given to me.
Yeah.
Just right. Throw it out.
Those crabs were given to me.
I can't just throw those away as a gift. I agree with you.
So I said, look, and then I started to get angry because, like I said, once in a while, I feel like I'm from a different planet. Like, look, I'm not a drug addict. I'm not a criminal. I'm not a terrorist. All I do is pay taxes. I'm putting this joint in my toiletry bag, and I'm bringing it back to Los Angeles. And then I thought, look, if I get pulled over and harassed or whatever it is, thrown in jail, I'll just make a federal case out of it. Sure enough, I got yanked out of line. And the guy started to go through my bag and open my toiletry bag.
Wow.
And at that point, I thought, maybe my little statement had crossed the line. But I popped it inside an aspirin container so it wasn't just floating loose in the bag. They did go through the bag. I don't know why. They'd never done it before. It was just one of those bad karma things. But then I went home and I got my doobie back with me. And kids, that's the whole point. I said, I want to make a statement. I said, I want to take this doobie home from Vegas. But I also didn't tape it to the bill of my cap. I put it inside a Tylenol container that you couldn't see through and popped the lid shut. I thought if they got that far, it was meant to be.
Right.
And I brought my doobie home. But 2 years... years for packing a joint.
You know, the way they do it in Mexico freaks me out.
Which part? Oh, where your family takes care of you?
No, where you, when you go into any part, just drive across the border and TJ, that's nothing. They weigh you in. They just drive you in. But when you fly into any Mexican city, you push a button on a street light.
Oh, yes.
And if it comes up red, it's just random.
Right.
If you push it, it's green, you just go, no matter what. You could have heroin glued to your face. If it's green, you go. But yeah. If you push the thing and it randomly comes up a red light, they rip your stuff apart.
Yeah.
And I hate that. Although I always think, because the customs guys here are trained to look at your eyes, to see if your eyes dilate, see if you look to, up to the left, to the right. Mm-hmm. There's training involved. Mm-hmm. The Mexicans just push this button, and, you know, you hope you roll and you get boxcars and land on Park Place. But what happens if it turns up red? That doesn't matter. You're assumed guilty, and they just shred your stuff.
Yeah, it is. We all piled over to Mexico once, and I was the only person out of my party where the chicken pecked on the wrong side of the line, right. And I got pulled over, and they searched my bag. Yeah, I like the folks
who
over
sneak the stuff into Mexico.
What do you got to get in there that they don't got? I suppose books.
They have books.
I don't know. I'm not judging. I'm just saying I don't know what they don't have. I've never seen a book in Mexico. That's all. It's not a judgment. It's not a moral judgment. I've just never seen a book.
The word dispersio. Somebody looked it up in the Mexican dictionary.
I bet they ripped off Librario, too. All right. That's the place they keep the books, right?
You are bandido stupido.
Right back at you, buddy. All right. We need to take ourselves a break. Wait a minute. Eric has a good story. Just says good story. Eric from Phoenix.
Adam, good morning.
Morning.
Hey.
Morning, Danny. Morning, Teresa. You guys doing an excellent job on radio.
Thank you.
All right. Here's what happened. I was riding my bike home from Buddy's house. It's, you know, just about sunset. And next thing I know, there's a cop pulling me over on my bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out, he's writing me a ticket because I did not have my headlight illuminated.
Uh-huh. On your bicycle.
On my bicycle.
Yeah.
So,
let me make this quick observation. Guy on bicycle during the daylight, and this is adult male. This is not 19-year-old or even 21-year-old. No college students here. I'm talking about guy in his 30s, guy in his 40s. Guy in his 40s on a bicycle during the day, winner. Guy on a bicycle in his 40s at night, loser drug addict. You ever see adult dudes riding their bikes at night and you go, wow, what's up with that cat? Something's going on with him. He got his license taken away or he lost his car in a cockfight or something.
He needs to be quiet.
Something. Yeah, there's something going on. You see the dude during the day all geared up on the mountain bike?
That guy owns his own
Fortune 500 company. He's out getting some exercise. The dude riding at night, squirrely, and especially the dude riding at night wearing like cowboy boots and jeans. It's like he's not wearing cycling stuff. So you got, now you're talking about bike or bicycle?
Bicycle,
yes. So not having a light on your bicycle.
Oh, I had it, but it wasn't turned on.
Okay, so you got a ticket for that.
Yeah, so what I did was I did a little research that day and found out the sunset at like 6:22. Well, in California, you have 30 minutes after sunset to turn your headlights on.
Uh-huh.
Well, come to find out, according to the local newspaper, I was still within that 30-minute time frame by 2 minutes.
Wow, and did you win?
Yes, I did. And the cop that was sitting there when I went to court to fight the ticket, the cop that wrote me up was sitting there, and his buddies, and this is from his own buddies, asked him, was he bored that day to write that kind of a ticket?
Good. We should give these guys as much crap as they can get. And again, you won, but you won what? 2 hours in the Librario looking this crap up and then a day and a half off work?
Well, about 10 minutes because the newspaper I stole off my neighbor's front porch.
Yeah, see, you do deserve to do crime. I beat a ticket, as I've said many times, in Burbank, which is the chicken-ass ticket of the world, capital of the world. But again, I won. I had to go down one day and file for it. I had to go down the next day. And when I say the next day, I mean a month later. But a second day, stand in line, spend a day in court. So I didn't get a chicken-ass jaywalking ticket that I never deserved in the first place. Again, you win. You win what? Zero?
It's a Pyrrhic victory. You know that term? It costs you more.
Yeah, like
in soldiers.
Sometimes that's often worth it to me.
Well, I don't know. Like if the Super Bowl's coming up and we pick a team and I win, you give me $100. You win, you don't have to give me $100. I don't like that kind of winning.
No, I don't like that. I don't like any of the kind of winning that we were just talking about. There's just sometimes that it's worth it to me. I don't know why.
It feels good.
I'm gonna
jump
back to violence. But say a guy in a bar spits on your date. There's no way you can win. He's too big. You're gonna get killed. As a matter of fact, I did something like that just the other night. Nobody got hurt, but I actually said to the person I did it to, who looked really shocked because she had never met me before, And I just said, sometimes a guy's just got to do a guy thing, and this is it.
Yeah, if somebody insults the honor of the person you're with, you're going to have to step up.
I wasn't with this person, but that's exactly what happened. You know, I hang out with this this kid, Amy, the school teacher.
Yeah.
I hang out with her all the time. She's the greatest kid in the world. She was at a neighbor's house, and there were strangers there for the fight, and somebody said just really filthy stuff to her. And then they said, oh, that's Danny Bonadigi's friend. And then they said really nasty stuff about me. So I went to the apartment, and I dropped off a note, and I wrote, Danny, and then what he'd said about me, Bonaducci, if you would like to discuss this in person, and gave them my home phone number. And the lady looked at me because she wasn't home that night, and I said, here's what happened, and sometimes a stupid-ass guy's got to do a stupid-ass guy thing, and this is mine.
Did anyone call?
No, I don't ever call.
Good times.
No, because people are telling him right now, don't call Bonaducci, you'll bite your eye out. Sometimes my reputation that I totally don't deserve helps me out.
Well, I personally would like the money that the city of Burbank was trying to extract from me, whatever it would have cost. If you beat a ticket, you should receive the money that it would have cost. Because I get a ticket for jaywalking. They won $80. I wasn't jaywalking. They're attempting to extort $80 right. out of me. Turns out I didn't do it. Now you pony up the $80, you pussies. Of course they don't. Ugh, Burbank. God damn. I'll take more chicken-ass tickets in that town than any place in the world. God, I hate that place. All right.
Yes.
I just said he's going to pick my whole life today. That's where I had dinner last night. And there's that main street in the Burbank, not the industrial area, like the residential. What a cute little area. It's like
look,
Melrose.
But here's the whole thing. Here's the only thing that drives me nuts. I'm the only person I've ever heard call this city of Burbank out. Burbank is where the Tonight Show films and where everyone does. Everyone I know has gotten a chicken-ass ticket in Burbank. Yeah. No one has ever spoken about it unless you bring it up. And then people go, yeah, I got a chicken-ass jaywalking ticket in Burbank, too. That's what they do in Burbank. Why we're supposed to be reverent for chicken-ass tickets as taxpaying citizens, I have no idea. We worried we're going to offend these guys, the Gestapo that gives out chicken-ass tickets in Burbank? We're worried we're going to offend them? I'm offended. I pay taxes. Stop messing with the public. And everybody, please stand up. Instead of going like, oh, hey, man, don't say nothing. You'll get them mad. Get them mad at who? What am I doing? We're not doing anything. We're trying to travel through your boring, crappy town, and you're harassing us.
Now, it's a lovely stance to take if you're running for office. It's not really like that, Adam.
What?
When you're what they call hooked and booked,
mm-hmm.
which is they hook up your hands and that's it. You're under arrest at that point.
Right.
I was arrested. I wasn't going to say anything because I don't want to top the guy's story about his bicycle. But I've told you this before. I was arrested for skipping once.
Skipping?
I was skipping in a park in San Diego at like 3 in the morning.
Is that illegal?
No, apparently they think only really effed up people at 30 years old do it.
Bill was cited for mincing once. Bored out Bill, but never skipping. What happened? Well, you know what? Hold on a second.
It's not that big of a deal.
I don't care. I'm teasing it. We're running late, and I want to hear how one gets a ticket for skipping.
Well, I didn't get a ticket. I went to jail.
How one gets hooked and booked for skipping. Not going to get you much cred in the joint, by the way.
By the way, I'll tell you how, Mr. Tough
what are you
Guy,
for?
By standing up and not being afraid. That's how, Mr. I'll tell you how to live your life.
Skipping with a little bit of hopping and a do-si-do and element left.
Goes over well with the selling.
All right, we need to take a break. T, the news will be next. Other than Danny's skipping story, what'll be in it?
Well, Ty Pennington may need an extreme makeover to his image, and I will tell you why.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
We'll take a quick break, be back with that and how Danny got arrested for skipping next.
Welcome back to the Adam Carolla Show. It's time to play Guess the Movie Quote with our Nicaraguan movie reviewer, Oswaldo Castillo. Can you guess which movie this famous line is from?
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
If you said The Godfather Part 3.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
You're correct. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
You had to know Part 3, not just The Godfather.
Did they only go to 3?
Yeah.
I didn't ever got to the 3.
They only got to 2.
I heard the reviews. Speaking of reviews, I'm going to review the microwave in the kitchen here. I have a cup of coffee that tastes like a cup of lasagna because somebody let their crap bubble over and never cleaned it up. And then when you put your coffee in for the little warm-up, you then reactivate the Romano cheese and the marinara sauce that bubbled over the last person who cooked their whatever. Look, I feel like we're this close to an open spit in this community kitchen. People come in here bringing bags of grocery. Pretty soon they're just going to bring livestock in here and actually slaughter it. People, it's a work kitchen. It's a work kitchen. You're not supposed to bivouac and set up a gravy train here. I don't want any ringing of a triangle bell. Here's what you bring in. You bring a little coffee, you bring a travel mug, and I'll let you bring in a little hot cereal if it comes in its own packet, and you eat it out of a cup. If you eat out of a bowl, you're not supposed to bring your own china from home. People come in here with full trays of lasagna. They got, it's a whole, the Horn of Plenty's open out there. It's a whole Thanksgiving spread. What time is it? What's going on? Don't you just have a cup of goddamn coffee and a granola bar? What's going on? Here's the deal. There's way too much home activity going on the workplace. This is why people are taking mammoth dumps. This is why they're in there doing the kind of offloading they're doing. They're eating three-course meals in the kitchen.
Another thing. Can I tell you just how weird you are?
What?
I want you to know that I am aware of who I am. Mm-hmm. I want you to know I know that Danny Bonaducci is about to call you crazy.
Yes.
But the stuff that bothers you, I do stuff to you sometimes where I go, well, I wonder if he's going to punch me in the face. And you go, huh, interesting. But then somebody heats up their lunch and you go insane. It's the kitchen, man. It's a microwave. It's a refrigerator. If you look in the microwave and the refrigerator, there's lean cuisines. What do you think people do in the company
All right,
kitchen?
Couple things. The big question around here is what don't they do? Because, again, these guys are cooking up pork chops. There's open spit barbecue.
Fondue
pots boiling in there. Look. There's too much eating and too much crapping going on around here. You're supposed to get up in the morning. Let me lay your schedule out, everybody.
Okay, please.
You have a place. It's called your home. That's where you do your Tai Chi, your living room, not my park. I don't want to see your gay ass out there with your sack swinging in the wind while my kid's out there trying to catch a frisbee. You do your stuff in your home. And then you eat something called breakfast at home. And when you're done with breakfast, you have a little morning constitution. That's what you do in the toilet at home. You don't come in here bringing eggs, bell peppers, and artichokes, cook up a breakfast in our home. Because it's a deal. It's a community kitchen. It's not everyone's kitchen 100%. It's everyone's kitchen 5%.
But you're forgetting one thing, the word kitchen. It's a community because that's where we gather. But it's the community kitchen. Does anybody else know what you do in the kitchen? You cook things.
It's a community bathroom, but I don't want to walk in there and see you rubbing one out.
Okay, fair enough.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because that's for your bathroom.
That is for
I don't want to see you naked with a towel around you just stepping out of a whore shower you took in the sink. It's a community. That's the whole point. The community
that's
part.
That's why I do the whore shower and the weird party that's right over the corner.
To me, the community part means check the part in your hair, do a number one tinkle, and heat up a pot of coffee. Not make lasagna and take a Duke. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, now you're saying that it's the Adam Carolla world, and you will poop where you're told.
That's
exactly what you're
not
saying.
Not where, it's when yes. and where
the
you're
thing
told.
Is, though, kids, that in the, this is why I find it so amusing, because he's not kidding. In what? Adam Carolla world, this is how things should work.
Now, here's,
most of the time you're right. Most of the time I would vote for you for king.
Here's the caveat.
Just not on the Dookie thing.
Here's the caveat. Look, first off, I'll give you a voucher. Once every 3 months, you can have a medical emergency
right.
and go in there and use the commode. I understand everyone's timing isn't always worked out right. just right. But on a daily basis, work your schedule out so you're not dropping the deuce in the company tea. Do that at home. And when it comes to eating, Eat your hot cereals, eat your cold cereals, eat your fruit, but don't bring your lasagnas and fish platter stinking up the whole place. And then, once your lasagna boils over so that there's marinara sauce all over the microwave, feel free to clean it up.
I'm with you there 1,000%. I'm with you that the smell of lasagna in the workplace is weird and odd.
At 6:20 in the morning.
But when I see the commercials every day for Lean Cuisine and the two white girls and the one black girl, and they're sitting around their cubicles after just microwaving their Lean Cuisine at the kitchen office kitchen.
Right.
That leads me to believe they are trying to represent normal America as much as possible. And if an entire ad agency says, this is what life looks like, and you say, don't heat things up in the microwave in the kitchen, you sound like the weird one to me.
Yeah, but we have people bringing in, like, stuffed bell peppers from parties that took place 3 months ago and de-thawing them in the microwave. Look, radio people are a mess.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Hate them.
The dregs of society.
The dregs of society.
Almost unemployable in any other facet of life, and they're all weird and idiosyncratic.
Girl jocks are kind of girl jocks in their appearance. Guy jocks take it as a badge of honor that they're in radio, that they can get so fat they can barely get through doors. And I personally think they pour gravy on their t-shirts before they come to work to show I can work in gravy stains.
Well,
I am
going to say that my microwave shaming program will be the first step in them shedding the extra pounds.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to sit down and eat 3-course meals at work. You're supposed to eat at home, and then you eat at lunch. All right. I've used up way too much time. We didn't get to Danny's skipping story. We didn't get to the news.
We also didn't get to you don't do Tai Chi in the park, which is weird because Adam put my chin-up bar at my place of business.
But, you know, to me, that was like hanging a spare tire in a monkey cage. You just want to keep them busy so we don't get any poop flung out.
Well, the good news is we've deployed Operation Shame, and let's see how it works.
All right. God. From your mouth to God's ears. All right, we'll take a break, and then I promise when we come back, the news. And Danny will tell us how he was arrested, not cited, but arrested for skipping next.
What's up, Jerry Ferrara, a.k.a. Turtle from Entourage, and I listen to Adam Carolla. If you don't, go f*** yourself.
Yeah, Turtle. Take that. Well, T's got her news. Quickly, Bonaducci is going to tell us how he was arrested for skipping at 3 a.m. in a beach community.
It's not a great story. If it was a great story, I would have been committing a crime. I was just so angry that I wasn't committing a crime that my behavior got me arrested. I was skipping because I felt like it.
At what time?
2-3 in the morning.
Where at?
Some park in San Diego.
And cop stopped you?
Female cop jumps the curb, comes up a curb.
In a car?
Yeah. Catches air.
Uh-huh.
All four tires, the front tires bang up the curb. And the back tires lay to slam them back down for a split second.
I don't want to correct you, but that's how all women drive.
Yeah, she might not have been after me at that time.
Yeah, my wife will cut right through a park.
Wanted to cut through being embarrassed that she driven that way.
Yeah, probably put an eyeliner on or something.
She literally comes screeching up to me so fast that I'm kind of pinned against a fence or a picnic table or something. Whatever it is, I'm kind of pinned by her car. It's not touching me, but it's so close. I've stopped. And she gets out of the car, and she's got her hand on her gun, and the thing unbuckled, and her other hand on her nightstick.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, freeze. And I look at her, and I go, do I appear to be moving?
Uh-huh.
I wasn't terrified. I don't know why I wasn't terrified.
Right.
Because cops could get a little crazy sometimes. But anyway, she goes, raise your hands, do the whole thing. Then she says, show me your driver's license. And I said, no. I said, I would show you my skipping license, but I don't happen to have it in my possession.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, show me your driver's license right now. And I think I told you I said this to a cop before. I said, as far as I'm concerned, since I am not in a motor vehicle, what you're doing is demanding to see my papers.
Right.
And this is America, and I will not show you my papers.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, put your hands behind your back and interlock your fingers. And then she did, if you've never been arrested, you don't know. There's a couple different ways you can put the cuffs on.
Yeah.
One, you can put them on and put them around and close them.
Right.
The other is they're closed already, and they perk perfect circles, and they slam one end, and they fly around and lock themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That hurts. You're being hit with a piece of steel right in that little bone right there.
Right.
Then also, the back of a key to a handcuff, have you ever noticed that little snub on the end of it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little, like a, eighth of an inch, a quarter inch peg.
Right.
What that does, it slips into a little notch in the back of the handcuffs so they can't get tighter.
Uh-huh.
Because what happens is you sit back on them and you cut off all your circulation.
They'll ratchet in, yeah.
Right. So to be polite, at some point they make it so you can't get out.
Right.
But then they lock them so they can't get tighter.
Mm-hmm.
This chick didn't do that. Mm-hmm. She slams them on hard, throws me in the back of the car, gets me. Now, once you're hooked, you're as good as booked. You haven't been processed. But the handcuffs are on. Arrested means she's arrested your movement, your freedom. Mm-hmm. So I've now been arrested.
Right.
And as far as I can tell, I've been arrested for skipping. And then I stood by, not showing my papers. And I stayed most of the night. And they finally said it wasn't worth that to them. They all knew who I was. They found no drugs on me. I wasn't high. They thought I should be high to be acting like such a jerk because I was out of my mind. Have you ever seen me get on my patriotic thing?
Yes.
Okay. I went all patriotic. You're demanding to see my papers, and I will not show them. I'm an American citizen, and I don't have to show
my
papers
like
to cross lines.
John Rambo in the First Blood.
He was
just drifting through town. The sheriff told him to keep moving, but he wouldn't keep moving. He knew his rights. They beat the bejesus out of him, but he didn't give in.
Yeah, but this John Rambo walks into town. The sheriff says, keep moving. I say, I know my rights, and they arrest me and make fun of me.
Well,
buy it.
I still am curious why you were skipping through town in
felt
the middle
like
of the night.
It.
Really?
I was in a good mood, yeah. I skipped.
Look, people like celebrate in different ways,
right.
Teresa.
Who am I to judge?
I actually read one time. This is way before I read this, so I don't know what then, but I would know now. That making a happy gesture when you're in a bad mood will improve your mood. If you're in a really bad mood and you go, ta-da, and do jazz hands or something,
uh-huh.
It really makes you feel better. And I thought it was the stupidest thing, but I tried it, and it worked. But that was after that. I was skipping just because I was skipping. I felt like skipping was my mode of transportation that night, and I was not going to be arrested for it, and I was not going to identify myself for it.
Leaving a trail of bedazzles in his path.
That was before I bedazzled. I was a thug.
That was pre-B.
Pre-B, yeah.
I was a full thug then.
All right, T. So arrested and for skipping through a park. I agree with Danny, which is you can sort of jumpstart your mood by cranking up a song you love.
Smiling.
Or just doing a little shadow boxing or playing a little air guitar or something. There is this part where no matter how depressed or how down or how blue you feel, if your body's doing the exact opposite, once in a while your mind will just follow along.
Yeah.
All right, T. I want to get in a better mood. Let's do the news.
Teresa Strasser, the number one Jewish news reporter on this station right now.
David Hasselhoff can skip and smile and shadowbox all he wants, but that will not help him right now. A judge suspended Hasselhoff's visitation rights with his two teenage daughters yesterday because of that home video in which David is drunk and eating a hamburger off the, kind of off a plate and also kind of off the floor of a Vegas hotel room.
He's got the longest 5-second rule of anybody I ever saw.
I hadn't thought of that. His estranged wife, Pamela Bach, followed up on that ruling by doing what any concerned mother would do. She went on Larry King. And Larry King asked Pamela Bach why her and David Hasselhoff's 16-year-old daughter, Taylor, taped her father drunk. And Pamela says it was a cry for help.
It is her cry for help because she sees there's nothing else going to work. As I've tried thinking, if I just pour out the bottles, if I just be by his side, if I just babysit him, give him more love, do more for him, or make him see himself, it will get there. But the disease of alcoholism is cunning. It's a baffling disease.
Oh, she's been to some meetings, cunning and baffling.
Yeah,
kid that's
that's part of the book.
Yeah,
yep.
It's
right
in the book.
Kid that's suffering the most is the son, Hobie.
Then nobody knows.
Hobie named his kid after a catamaran. That's how much Mitch loved lifeguarding. If anyone saw Baywatch, he named his kid after a catamaran, Hobie Cat.
Now, there's been a lot of discussion about how this tape.
Your brother Ziffy Board's very disappointed.
Larry King presses Pamela Bach on who on earth, besides her, would have had motive to release this tape.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Pamela had to say.
Pamela, you think your daughter released it?
No.
No,
I don't.
Well, she didn't release it, you didn't release it, and obviously he didn't release it. Who released it?
I don't know.
And don't help anybody.
It doesn't help anybody. I don't know who did it. Do I want to know? And then I'm really big into my spirituality. I go to coffee and talk to Mike with and listen to the words of the wisdom. And, you know, as Winston Churchill said, when you're going through a tough time, just keep on going. But I find myself wanting to...
I don't remember that.
I think he said, when the going get tough, the tough get going, didn't he?
Close enough.
Yeah.
She's been through
a lot.
No wonder
that man drinks. He's married to a tard.
Well, the judge has, as I said, has ordered David's visitation suspended for 2 weeks.
Well, look, hold on. Here's the problem with most of the so-called journalism that goes on and why I end up getting in arguments with a lot of people I interview. And I understand it's uncomfortable, and sometimes you want to get into it and sometimes you don't. But Larry King should be saying, wait a second, your daughter didn't release this, right? Right. And your other daughter? No. And you didn't release it? No. Well, how does the videotape? And Hasselhoff? No. How does the videotape get from the video camera to Harvey Levin over at TMZ or wherever it gets to? Who physically brings them? Are you saying that somebody broke in your house and stole it?
First of all, that's why they're doing Larry King and not Adam Carolla. They know he won't ask.
Maybe he asked, but he softballed.
But yeah, he always softballs, and he gets some of the best guests in the whole
that's
world.
How do they get the tape? I don't know, Larry. I'm getting deep into my spirituality right now.
He replies, don't help anyone.
Doesn't help anyone. You're right.
He's a double negative.
Yeah, well... obviously, the tape was released. Now, either somebody broke into the house and stole the tape, which nobody's saying, which doesn't seem to happen, or one of the three people, not Hasselhoff, will take him off the list. Now it's you or your daughter, probably you, released the tape.
Motive does point to her pretty clearly.
Yeah, you know the other motive?
Yeah.
You go scratch her lottery ticket and find out how much boozing her dad did.
Highly likely that she wouldn't have ended up in this situation
anybody that talks about agape love.
It's the way it works.
I'm not even quite sure what it is.
It's a cactus you make tequila out of.
I think she was talking
about... No, I've had agave love 1,000 times. I think I actually had it with a cactus once.
I might be mistaken, but
that chick hadn't waxed in a really long time.
I think agape is a church in Los Angeles, and it's one of these groovy... non-denominational churches.
That's close enough. But
and I believe that's
what chicks say it all the time these days. It's like agape love.
Look, he can't visit, but he can still call.
Yes, everyone, leave your spirituality alone. You don't need to go looking for it. There's something that's broken in you. You're not going to find it in some non-denominational church.
Well, it helps some people.
Screw them.
It does help some people.
Ty Pennington, Extreme Home Makeover Home Edition carpenter.
Yes.
He was popped for drunk driving. He was busted shortly after midnight Saturday morning. I guess that's Saturday morning. Technically in the West Side neighborhood of Los Angeles. No word why police pulled him over or what his blood alcohol level was. He was booked on a DUI charge. He was released on $5,000 bail. And yesterday, he released a statement saying, quote, I made an error in judgment. We all make mistakes. However, this is about accountability. Under no circumstances should anyone consume alcohol while driving. He went on to say, I could have jeopardized the lives of others, and I'm grateful there was no accident or harm done to anyone. And then he apologized to his fans, to ABC, and to his design team.
The design team. The other actors that are supposed to be pretending to be people that know something about home improvement. The design team, for the love of Christ. Okay, look, I'd love to dig into Ty Pennington because he's an imposter and he knows nothing of carpentry. Now, I'm not being an a-hole about it. I just don't like the idea that we live in a society where we pass people off as experts and they're not. I've sat down with Ty Pennington, had a conversation with him. I did 2 hours with him on Loveline. He doesn't know anything about the topic. He's an imposter, just like Exhibit doesn't know anything about fixing cars or whoever they got over there in Pimp My Ride. Most of these people don't know jack about the subject they're supposed to be experts in. Ty Pennington is not a carpenter, but he's a nice enough guy, and he got popped for something that could have happened to me 3,000 times. So let's not pass judgment. If some guy cusses out his daughter, I could see myself doing that in about 15 years when my daughter turns into a little snot-nosed little chick who's like, I hate you, Daddy. You're not the boss of me. Oh, yes, I will dig into her. And seeing as how I've traveled to the moon and back drunk in my automobile, it's hard for me to pass judgment.
Right.
So I won't do it on that either. And we should all withhold that unless we are not guilty of it.
This is the last time I'm going to do this today because I can tell it's in my mind and sometimes things get in your head and they stay there.
Yeah.
Like the opening of the show is almost always something that got into Adam's head at some point during the course of the evening,
right.
and he couldn't shake it. And I can see that that could happen to me. So I just, one last time, I would like to put Adam Carolla's priorities in perspective. What Adam knows most about, possibly, and is the best at, is carpentry.
Yes.
And he's an entertainer. There is an imposter fooling America every day, lying to our faces, who has now been arrested for drunk driving. And Adam says, eh, but you heat up your lasagna in a kitchen, you should be hung.
I tell you, I had a meeting with the Endeavor people or whoever, animal.
Right.
I had a meeting before they did that show, and they said, hey, do you want to be Ty Pennington? Except for they say, hey, they didn't do it that way. It's more like, do you want to be part of his design team? In which case, he owes me an apology. And I said, who's Ty Pennington? And they said, the greatest carpenter and the funniest man on the planet. This guy's funny.
Oh, he is an imposter.
He's funny as all get out, and he's a master carpenter. And I said, that human being does not exist. And if it does, I'm the closest guy to that human being. And they said, oh, no, this guy's funny as all bejesus and master carpenter. And I shook my head. I couldn't believe it. Ace man, there's a guy who's funnier than you, and there's a guy who swings a better hammer than you. It can't be. But it was, and I was humbled, and I did not take that gig. And then later on, I met Ty Pennington, and I thought, well, not funny, and hell no, he ain't a carpenter.
You know what was great one day? I saw Adam, because I told Adam the biggest blowhard thing I ever said, and it's so blowhard, it's embarrassing.
I only said that story so you can say this.
But this is about you.
I know what the story is. I'm just coaxing it out of you. Go ahead.
I just remember him talking about, we were all talking about, I actually brought up how kind Adam has been to me since I started working here. I don't know. I would have been as kind of blah, 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 blah. And he said, and not being mean to me, he said something to the effect of, well, if you were going to bring somebody that could do this, I'd feel this way. And if you were going to bring in somebody that was funnier than I, well, that's just impossible. And if you were, and he was just like dead serious. That was like the facts. Like, you could go out and get Henny Youngman's unborn child with George Carlton and Richard
Phyllis
Pryor.
Stiller. That's
and they're still just not as funny as Adam Carolla. And it's like, I was.
So hold on a second. If Henny Youngman and Phyllis Diller crapped out a kid,
not as funny,
still
as,
not
Adam
as, funny as Adam Carolla.
Because you didn't bat an eye. And that's what I guess. I saw my wife do that once. She said in a very serious interview, she said, no, and taking care of three children is a full-time job. And she went on and on and on. It took me 20 minutes to realize we only have two kids. She's talking about me.
The same
kind of stature Carolla said. Well, that's impossible.
The blowhard story I told to Bonaducci when we met is the reason I was not threatened by him being part of this morning show is there's no way he's going to sit here and be funnier than me. That man has not been born. I know it sounds the biggest blowhardy thing in the world. And if we were shooting a sitcom, I wouldn't feel that way. And if we were doing a movie, I wouldn't feel that way. And if we were making a record, I wouldn't feel that way. I only feel that way about radio. I don't feel like there's anyone who's going to sit next to me and make me look unfunny. So I said, welcome aboard.
Right. Now, the fact that you happen to be wrong is not important here.
That's so funny.
What is important here is that you believe it like I believe it. Not that I'm the funniest man in radio or that thing. I just, that you believe it, which almost makes it a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because people who are kind of funny don't think, oh, it's impossible. He can't just sit there and be funnier than I. And I, you would think you'd take exception. Mm-hmm. But that's immediately what I knew. I really like this guy. That just said, well, you know, here, he's not going to, no one's going to, that's what he said exactly. There's nobody's going to sit in that chair and be funnier than I am because that man hasn't been born yet. And I thought, I love this guy.
Well,
this is my kind of guy.
And again, so I don't sound like such a colossal ass.
Oh,
it's really
right.
All the talent is in TV. You know, I got to beat Imus and Boomer and the Nudge and
we're going to get him.
The Nasty Man.
Well, people always ask me, okay, really, do they always fight? Do Adam and Danny always fight?
That's
because
weird.
And they always say the same thing. They go, but they're two alpha males. And I explain that's exactly why they don't fight, because each one just isn't threatened by the other.
Yeah, but I'll tell you the truth on that, because I get asked
alpha.
That a lot. I get asked that a lot, and it's because Adam can do so many more things than I can do. If it was just this contest of who's funny on the radio, who could take more mic time and that kind of thing, it might be weird. But he can do what I can do, and he can build a house.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
And he can fix a car. He can do other guys' stuff.
Do you guys want to go fishing?
I'm not alpha. I'm zeta. Or whatever the end is. I'm not an alpha male.
You think so?
No.
I'm not in a competition with a guy that can build a house.
Right.
You have different grounds. Do we have time for another story? Should I wrap it up?
We'll do one more.
Okay. Now, we were talking about drug smuggling.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm just going to sound like such a mo for Carolla, so I'd really rather we just moved on.
You know, you can like each other without being gay. The more you know.
Can I have sex with him? That crosses the line.
Okay, here's a story. It's a little bit gross. About a drug mule voyage that went horribly wrong. A 35-year-old from Ho Chi Minh was trying to smuggle some drugs over the weekend. He was on Vietnam Airlines going to Sydney, Australia, smuggling more than 2 pounds of heroin. His smuggling method of choice, dividing up the heroin into baggies and swallowing them. But about halfway through the flight, there was some turbulence. Oh. And when you have a kilo of heroin in your stomach, I guess that makes you feel sick. He started throwing up, but no food came out. Just 2 little baggies of heroin. So that was enough to make the plane turn around, go back to Vietnam. And when it got there, doctors examined this 35-year-old man and found 30 more baggies in his stomach. He was arrested for drug trafficking, which is not a good thing to be arrested for.
Is he a Vietnamese guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good breed for muling drugs.
No.
Samoan.
Yeah.
I could pack 50 pounds into a Samoan. He wouldn't even know it.
No, a great way to
Vietnamese
smell.
Vietnamese go about $1.10.
Yeah, you want to smuggle a Mexican across the border. Just have a Samoan. Eat him.
That's what I do. Don't laugh. I like when people do that. Hey, Teresa, seriously.
Oh, wow.
Half the guys that are working for me right now got into this country inside a Samoan.
You wear them like a suit. The Samoan suit. Like those sumo wrestler suits. You just get inside a Samoan.
That's right. We lube you up. You get a run-in start. And next thing you know, you're picking cabbage.
You get to the side of the border, the Samoan Ralphs, and out you come picking cabbage. That's right. How it works.
The more you know, I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news.
Teresa Strasser with the real news. QCNN.
All right. Is there a group we haven't offended? We got the gays, the Samoans, Vietnamese.
Mexicans.
I think we gave it to them. Yeah, Mexicans.
Women, I think we hit.
All right, let's give...
I didn't actually hit one. I discussed hitting you.
Let's give the brothers a break because Judge Hatchett is in the house. Well, you can call her Glenda A. Hatchett. Judge Hatchett, 6th season syndicated. I love the Tough Love Judges.
Yeah, very popular show.
Can you do that without actually having any kind of degree? Because I feel like that'd be a decent gig for me.
Why not?
Just judging. Yeah. I love to judge, the one gig. In all parts of society, they go, you can't judge a book by jury, you shouldn't judge, no judging. It's the one gig where you get paid to judge.
Right.
Judge Hatchett, next on the Adam Carolla Show.
I got something for you. I'm sending you to jail.
Judge Hatchett, with Adam, Danny, and Teresa on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, she's tough as nails up on the bench, but sweet as sugar in the studio. Judge Hatchett. I'm just speaking to her. She's gregarious. She's in great mood. I thought you'd be tough. Glenda Hatchett is in. Judge Hatchett, 6th season syndicated.
Seventh season. Yeah.
Syndicated. What you can do is just go to judgehatchett.com and you'll find out all the local times.
Right.
All right. I know you started off doing juvenile work, and that's sort of...
Me too.
That's your passion.
We're kind of really the same that way. You started off working with juvenile criminals. Of course, I started off
as
a juvenile criminal.
That's why we relate so well together.
Yeah.
How do we
know each other?
How do we stop this scourge? I have a young son. Oh. What do I do with him? How do I prevent him from seeing you in 13 years?
It sounds simple, Adam, but the more time you spend with him, the less time he's going to spend with you.
That's out of the question.
Is there any other
There's
way?
No drugs or anything I could just
and,
give him?
It's really a function of spending time and listening, because what happens is that we try to start listening when they're 15 and 16 when we think that stuff is going wrong. But if you get in the habit of listening, I mean, I know it sounds really simple, and asking them questions when they're 2 and 3 and 4 when they're likely to talk to you, they'll get in the habit. So, you know, my teenagers download on me, and there's some stuff. Sometimes I'm just kind of going, oh, wow.
What do they tell you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like they'll say, well, Mom, you know, this guy is going out with this chick, and she's too young, and, you know, he doesn't really need to be doing this, and, yeah, I think they're having oral sex, and he's really taking advantage of her, but, you know,
you need to know.
It's nice that they trust you enough.
What the hell are you supposed to talk to your three-year-old about? They want to stare at your keys and talk about, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine. I want my kids.
That's good.
Dante's 6. My youngest is 6. And I think I could talk to him. He said the other night to me, are you and Mommy still getting a divorce? And I mean, he asked it plain as day.
Wow.
Really?
Of course, what I told him the answer was fire truck. That was good enough for him. But the question was clear.
Yeah. Dad's going to the divorce farm. Don't worry.
But I'm telling you, if they don't talk to you, they're talking to somebody.
Right.
So keep the family intact. and speak to them. What about that? I feel like the broken families, they did some sort of, I don't know how official it was, but it's basically they did some sort of test a few years back where a woman is driving in the car and the kids are being noisy in the back seat. And the woman's like, be quiet, kids. Quiet down, kids. I'm going to pull this car over. They don't really listen. When the dad is driving the car and he's like, hey, zip it, the kids shut up.
Yeah.
I think they need the male authority figure. Otherwise, they don't respect authority. And I'm wondering if a lot of the broken families are causing a lot of the young kids to head in front of you at an earlier age.
Well, I tell you, I mean, I think that the fact that a lot of kids do come from broken homes, I'm not going to sit here and say it's not a factor. But I've been a single mom for a long, long time. So mm-hmm. the fact that your kids grow up in a single parent home doesn't automatically mean that they're going to end up with me.
No, but you have more chutzpah than most guys could ever muster.
That's true.
Probably so. Probably so. I mean, well, it's really interesting because my younger son was asking, he says, do you watch your mom on TV? And he was like, hell no. You know, I live it every day. You know?
Right.
I mean, I don't want to watch that on TV.
Well, how did
I live it every day.
How did it work for you? Where did it start? And how did you go from being a judge to being a TV judge?
See, everybody thinks that I left my court in Atlanta to go to do TV. I didn't do that, Adam. I actually left court, I'm going to be honest, because the reality was that I was facing college tuition down the road, and I was going to go back into corporate America. I mean, I'd been a civil servant for 8 years,
mm-hmm.
but I also need to get my soul recharged. When you see the kind of things I saw every day, the drive-by shootings, the tortures, or you have. I mean, I know it's early in the morning, so I'm not going to bring you down. You've got a five-year-old little girl sitting in your chambers because I dealt with kids who were committing crimes. I also dealt with child abuse and neglect. And she's perfectly healthy, Adam. And then now she's HIV positive because her aunt prostituted her in exchange for some crack cocaine. Come on.
I know. That's the whole thing. Crazy. Like, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I just like, look, I'm going to leave. Rusty, come with me. We're going to torch the courthouse. That's my only solution here. I don't know about giving you time for this or sending you to counseling for that.
Is that something you actually saw, Judge Hatcher?
No, that was a real case. Wow, I'm not exaggerating. And, you know, I could tell you stuff this morning that would have you throwing up, and I'm not going to do that.
So there's only so much, of that you can take.
Right. I said, I need to go and get my soul recharged. So I was going to take off a year, spend time with my own children, because I'd always been a working mom. Then Sony called me and said, we want to talk to you about doing this pilot. And I'm like, no, don't want to do that, because I didn't want to do what I saw on court TV.
Did you actually do the talk to the hand gesture while on the telephone?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't know you did that.
I
thought you did that like to people, not just in your own kitchen.
Even over the phone, I'm like,
right on. Okay.
Well, now how does one become a judge? Do you have to be an attorney first? Do you have to pass the bar?
You have to pass the bar.
And then
you
what?
You have to be an attorney.
You're appointed,
in Georgia,
right?
In some cases, you are appointed. I was appointed. In some cases, you actually have to stand for election.
Hold on, what a shocker.
In
Jewish
Georgia,
broad knows something about the law.
You have to be
actually let me try cases just based on that.
There's not a Jew I know that's not an honorary attorney or at least an honorary doctor. Most Jews walking around know more about the medical industry than actual physicians, even if they're lay people. That stereotype going, T.
Yeah.
So you
of course, two of the most popular judges on television are black.
But are you saying you didn't want to be like the judges you saw, like Judge Judy, for example?
No, I didn't want to do that. And the only way I ended up doing this pilot was that I said I'd have to develop it. So that's why my show is different. That's why we kind of push the envelope on
now,
this stuff.
I don't know how lucrative your gig is, but Judge Judy makes $30 million a year or something.
She can't count. So much money she cannot count. Trust me, I am.
I mean, we're not talking about $10 million a year.
No, we're talking
closer to 50 than to 10. I mean, we're talking like Oprah money for Judge Judy.
Like a third highest paid woman in TV.
She's making a lot of money.
Wow.
And her numbers are astronomical.
You know what made that woman?
People love that show.
I swear to God, this is what made that woman. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Right.
Yeah,
that phrase made her. And then she wrote her book.
Yeah.
I've heard that phrase.
She came to see me. I have to tell you, she was in the building where I was shooting in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And she just
just appeared back in my area and said, I'm here to see you. I mean, she has been extremely supportive.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Very encouraging.
Well,
yeah,
we're speaking to Judge Hatchett.
Yeah,
Judge
Mark
Glenda.
And Brian just came over here and kissed Adam and I.
That's right. Just keeping a good word. Glenda A. Hatchett, Judge Hatchett, 7th season syndicated. You can just go online to judgehatchett.com.
Right.
What do you think the, as somebody who's seen the horrors you've seen from the bench, as far as this nation goes and its future, what do you think we're missing as a society? What do we need to know? What do we? How can we alter this course that we're seen to be on?
I think we have to get back to some basics. I wrote a book a couple of years ago, and it just simply the title is Say What You Mean and Mean What You Say. We've gotten too far away from that, Adam. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this, we don't need to run around the bush. When you say no, you mean no.
Right.
It's no today, it's no tomorrow, it's next week. Children are designed, they're born, we all did it. You're supposed to push the limits. We try to get away with whatever you can try. And if we don't have some standards and some guidelines here, and what happens is that we then evolve into these adults, so we figure we can do whatever we want to do.
But are we talking about at home, or are we talking about our institutions? Because we're in a place now where if a teacher yells at your kid, the parent wants to sue the teacher.
Right. It starts at home. I mean, if my teacher had said, and you had the same thing growing up, said, I'm going to call your mother. I mean, you do anything like, oh, please, don't do anything to call my mother. And
yes.
What we're doing is we're sending bad messages to our kids, because then we go up to school and we curse out the teacher in front of our kids, which sends the signal to the kid, I can do anything.
Well, you know what? You know what I think? I know what I think. Yes, I know what I think we're doing. I think we're feeding our kid, and this is not only the parents, but this is, you know, Reebok when they say during their campaign, it's your world. I hear more parents say to their kids, you don't ever let anyone ever say you can't do this to you. You are special. You do whatever you want. Don't you ever let anyone ever tell you fill in the blank. And it's like, hold on, Missy. That's all you're supposed to do before the age of 18 is have people order you around. I remember growing up, as I said comically, I'm the only human being on the planet that I'm aware of that was never hit by my own parents, but struck by two of my friends' parents. That's right. One man, one woman. I've been hit by parents, by friends' parents, but not my own parents. Now, each time, I never said a word to my parents because I was acting out and I thought I would get into trouble.
Right.
I don't think my kids are going to be that way. My kids are probably going to hire an attorney if that happens and have a lawsuit before I even know about it.
My daughter said to, I think it was my wife or me, but we might have been both of us, but Dad, seriously, because she didn't know exactly the rules. We said, that's a timeout. You go to your room right now. And she said with a straight face, I will call 911. She has been taught that everything equals child abuse.
It is on speed dial at the Bonaducci house, to be fair.
But that is a problem because I ended up locking up a kid one time, Danny, for calling 911.
Just once?
Well, I was going to tell you about it. Yeah, well, I have done it more than once. But this particular case, I wanted to send a message, not only to the kid, but I wanted to send the message to the entire city because I wanted the word to get out. She called 911. She was mad at her mother. There had been no abuse. And I said, how dare you? How dare you? And so I locked her up for abusive process.
Right.
And so the word quickly got around that you better not abuse this. Because I will tell you, had I called 911 when I was a kid, that would have been the last call I would have made.
Abuse
I would not be sitting
of
here.
Process.
Oh,
I,
please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Judge Hatchett, I have so much passion for that abusive process. Fortunately or unfortunately, in my rant, which will come right after we speak to Larry the Cable Guy, who's popped on the line, nine, so I will abuse his process for one moment.
Sure.
Larry?
He's doing it.
Adam?
Get her done!
My God, hey! You got Danny on there with you, don't you?
Yeah.
Hey, Danny.
Yeah.
You remember me?
Of course I remember you.
Dude. I was working at the Funny Bone on 221 South Street in Philly, and you come out and you said, man, I love your one-liners. I swear to God, I ain't never laughed so hard. Remember when I hung out with you on the radio all night?
I do indeed remember that.
I swear, I love you.
It's Chicago I don't remember. I'm pretty cool about Philly.
Yeah, Philly, you remember. Chicago was the one that was the blur, right?
Yeah, it sure was, man. But it's nice to talk to you again. I'm glad you've done so well since then.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's been going crazy, but I'm here in L.A. now, and of course, I don't live here, but boy, you see some stuff. You know what I seen today?
What?
fat homeless people.
Yes.
Yes.
We have them.
Fat. Well, they must be new, I guess. Fat homeless. I guess you really can eat yourself out of house and home.
Larry the Cable Guy, by the way, and Judge Hatchett, who's in studio, I feel like everyone on the planet officially falls in between Larry the Cable Guy and Judge Hatchett.
They cancel each other out.
They are the bookends, the A to Z of humanity. Larry the Cable Guy and Judge Hatchett.
I love you, Larry. I watch you.
Boy, I love Judge Hatchett.
Yo, look at that.
I'm a big fan of Judge Hatchett. Did you see? I was watching the news morning before I called. Did you see that woman in Brazil had a 16-pound baby?
Yeah.
Oh. Good God, where'd they make love next to a microwave? That's a big ass dude. Evidently, he had to hand out special cigars that said, it's a man.
Hey, Larry the Cable Guy, were you not on 60 Minutes about 4 or 5 months ago?
Boy, yes, I was, Adam. That was the cool. I mean, I was scared, too. I think I'm the only fellow ever been featured on there. Didn't go to jail 2 weeks later or rehab.
Yeah, you're certainly the only one ever featured who wasn't wearing sleeves.
That is correct. And I thought it was pretty cool to do it, too, because I did a program a week before that. I was getting interviewed about the sex lives of married couples on a show called 60 Seconds.
Right.
So I just thought it was cool, but I'll tell you the problem with these high-profile programs.
What's going on?
Well, you get weirdos coming out. I mean, I got some women right now that all they want is money. They want to extort some money.
Right.
They want to release, after they see me on there, they want to release these sex videos that I made with them about 17 years ago. And it just kind of pisses you off. You know, you work hard, you make a little money, then you got relatives coming out of the woodwork.
That's a good incest joke, Larry the Cable Guy.
Hey, Judge Hatchett.
And that's the kind of material that got me up with Danny Bonaducci.
Can I ask you something? Now, I'm positive the answer is going to be no, but early on, maybe, in your career, a guy got up in front of you in court and said, "Howdy, Judge, how y'all doing?" Was there a part of you that reacted instinctively, who is this peckerwood that I'm about to send to jail?
Well, actually, see, I grew up in Atlanta. So this is very much a part of my experience. So they just,
so I repeat my question. Now that you grew up there, do you think, hey, who's this peckerwood I'm sending to jail?
Well, how about...
We're good folks.
A sleeveless, like I've seen a bunch of guys come on these, not only your show, but just other televised court shows wearing a Make and Bacon t-shirt and cut off sweats. And I think to myself, if you can't pull it together for the judge, isn't that some insight into possible guilt? I would judge him based on the t-shirt.
Oh, no, you can't base him on the t-shirt. Yeah. But I have wardrobe back in the back of the courthouse, seriously, in our studio, where I just have to make him change clothes.
Really?
Because they come out with, like, you know, all kind of obscene things on their t-shirts. I've seen women that, you know, basically they could have rivaled Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl thing. I mean,
really?
I'm like, come on, you got to go put on some clothes. Go put on some clothes.
Larry the Cable Guy, Delta Farce, new movie coming out in theaters this Friday. I say does better than Spidey. I do.
I'll tell you what, Pirates of the Caribbean, they already told me they'd mad at me. We released them before them.
What other comedies are out right now? I don't know. I mean, there's Disturbia and there's, you know, Spider-Man and whatever else is out there. There's plenty of room for a little comedy, namely Delta Farce.
Let me tell you something. This movie, it's just about these fellas that get mistaken as troops on the way to Iraq. They go through some bad weather. The Humvee they're sleeping in gets ejected out of the back. They land in the desert. They think they're in Iraq. They're in Mexico.
Sure.
And it was filmed on location here in Los Angeles.
It was.
And I'll tell you what, it was just a movie I wanted to do that's funny all the way through. I wanted something that the troops would laugh at. We actually had the premiere a week ago today at Andrews Air Force Base. Brought all the folks from Alder Reed out. They had their wives, their families. And I'm going to tell you, the reaction, Adam, Danny, was awesome. I mean, they cheered, laughed, came up to us at the end and said thanks. I mean, it's really good. So I think if you want to go see a good, funny movie, it has nothing to do with the war. So if there's any critics out there saying it's a bad move, it ain't about the war. It's about laughing at a funny movie. So
the Three Stooges meets Stripes is how you describe it.
You know what? Three Stooges meets Platoon.
Oh, wow. Even better.
Even better. Be interesting. Hey, Danny, I see you on a lot of them talk programs. You're good on there.
Thank you, man.
I'm telling you, every time you're on it, there's always something I throw my fist up and go, yeah, that's right, by God.
Well, that's because you're a fine American. You stand up for what you believe in.
You damn right.
Fine sleeveless American.
So I just thought of something. Yes. If you're going to do Stripes meets Platoon,
right?
Why couldn't the NI, I apologize to present company, why can't you do a hardcore, hysterically funny porn?
Because everyone's coked out of their mind and can't act?
You know, I didn't really expect that. Right.
Also, I think Larry the Cable Guy's kind of wholesome. Wasn't your dad a preacher?
Yeah, my dad was a preacher, but they have had funny porn movies. You ever seen any of that midget porn?
Come on, Danny. Wake up and smell the porn, baby.
You might want to stand next to me next time you ask that question. I've starred in midget porn.
Than a midget with a yo-yo?
Every time Danny has sex, it's technically midget porn. Larry, the Cable Guy, Delta Farce.
My job all day.
In theaters this Friday, we'll be watching. Good times, buddy, and get her done.
Hey, thanks, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure.
Bye,
Larry. We'll see you in person next time. We need to take a break. Judge Hatchett is here. Glenda A. Hatchett. Judge Hatchett, seventh season, syndicated. JudgeHatchett.com is where you go. I'd like to talk to Judge Hatchett about where this country is heading in a little more detail. We'll keep that train going next on The Adam Carolla Show.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on The Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Titusville, Florida. A 32-year-old female teacher was arrested after two undercover police officers found her having sex with a 16-year-old student in her van in the parking lot of the First Presbyterian Church. Definitely not a Jew.
Well, that may have the Definitely Not a Jew crown. Titusville, Florida, van, Presbyterian Church, sex with an underage kid. Speaking of sex with underagers, Judge Hatchett in studio. Not that she condones that, but she's put a lot of perps away for that. Judge Hatchett can be found on its seventh season, in its seventh season, syndicated. Go to JudgeHatchett.com. Judge, so used to work with minors and juvenile court. That's right. Where he got started.
Right.
Let's talk about some issues like this Virginia Tech thing. Oh. Is this stuff preventable? And why aren't we talking about it, by the way? Really, yeah. IMUS got much more ink than this Virginia Tech thing.
Unforgivable.
32 people dead versus people offended.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to me.
Know, Adam, you're absolutely right. I don't know that this was preventable. Everybody says, well, this person should have done this, this person should have done this.
But
who could have anticipated this, Danny? I mean, who could have anticipated that a kid that a lot of folk thought was just weird? I mean, look back on all the folk that we've encountered, college, high school, and you just thought they were weird. You know, they were different, maybe a little strange.
Look, when stop looking at me.
If you watch,
I'm explicit.
You're bedazzled. It's hard to avert my gaze. Speaking of gaze, what's with the bedazzling? Right. If you look at any bio, you watch your bio channel, I don't care if they're talking about Andrew Carnegie or they're talking about the world's greatest performer. They were shy. They were introverted. Yes. They weren't popular in their high school.
Right.
Of course. Of course, everyone has a crystal ball now. But if we stopped every weirdo from being weird, we'd have to shut down every campus.
We would.
And build 1,000 prisons.
And I think back, like, I had a stalker in law school, right? Mm-hmm. And all I just wanted him to leave me alone.
Right.
So I didn't want him arrested. I didn't want him to have to go through anything. I just wanted him to leave me alone. And so, you know, should I have pressed charges in retrospect? Did he go on to do some crazy stuff? I don't know. But I can understand how these young women just said, you know, I just want to be left alone.
Oh,
and,
of course.
And people are saying, well, if they had brought criminal charges, well, you can't anticipate.
I mean, we've never seen this in the history of this nation, that someone would go out and do this kind of mass murder.
Right.
You know, the campus police should have done this. These guys break up frat parties and people being maybe drunk at frat parties. They don't deal with mass murders.
Of course. And it's the parents I'd like to focus on, because everyone says, what about the counselors? Well, the counselors have 30,000 students they have to look after.
The court did mandate that he get mental health care. He just didn't show up.
Nobody cares except for the family. That's the way it works, everybody. We're all looking around like, hey, where's my health care? Where's my paycheck? Where's my counseling? Where's my whatever? Where's your family?
Where is your family? And the great aunt was interviewed back in South Korea, and I thought she made a very interesting point. She said, we knew when he was a little boy that something was wrong with him, and she even alluded to the fact that that's why they left South Korea, to get away and to take him to a different place.
Because he was
He was very, very, very strange.
On the other
strange.
Hand, his sister was Ivy League educated. So is it the parents or was he mentally ill?
Well, I think he was mentally ill, no question about it. The question is, as parents, where is our responsibility to say that something's wrong with my child and not be in denial?
Right.
Well, some parents just say they don't want to deal with it. You know, they just are in denial.
Now, look, first off, anyone who's listening via the internet in South Korea right now who has a troubled teen and wants a new location, try North Korea.
Yeah,
it's right across the border.
Cross
that DMZ and head over to North Korea and leave us out of this. Number one. Number two, I am furious at the media for talking about every angle of this story, except for the one angle that probably or might have had at least a working chance of preventing this, is the family. What's going on with the family? You have a kid who's drawing 666 into his mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving, and you're not getting him counseling. You're not doing what you could do. Now, maybe you are. I don't know, because the news, all they say is, let's not forget his family's a victim too. Kiss my ass. I want to know what they did. And if you show me a big long paper trail of them trying to take him to counselors and them trying to get him on medications and stuff, then you get a pass.
Right,
but
right,
I want them to look into it. There's two stories that they're not looking into. What did the cops do when they surrounded the building other than wait till the shooting stopped and then head in?
Did you watch that
and
video?
What's going on?
Standing there.
But here's the deal. What's going on with the media? All the media wanted to do is read emails from alumni who felt horrible about the tragedy, and then it was back to Imus and Hasselhoff.
Yes.
Where is going on with the family? Right. They're culpable, as far as I can tell, unless I hear otherwise. I want to know why they had a monster, and they should have cared more.
Do you agree
and
with
they
that,
unleashed it.
Judge, and not necessarily that I disagree with Adam. I'm curious. Is it an automatic, the way I think Adam put it that last time, and he doesn't always phrase it the same way because he's really passionate about this. It starts with the family. If you look into that family, you're going to see it could have been prevented right there. Is that always the case?
It's not always the case, Danny, but it is a big part of the case, because who better knows what's going on with this child? As you say, a counselor that sees 30,000 children, or I am his mother. I have dealt with him since he came into the world. I have known something was wrong. I either didn't want to deal with it, was in denial, or didn't have the capacity to deal with it. I've had families who honestly didn't have the capacity to deal with the complex mental issues of their children and didn't really know how to get help. And in those situations, you got to understand. But if the family is educated and you're sitting there drinking your coffee and the kid is like acting crazy and you do nothing, then you can't later say, I just didn't understand it.
And you know what it is? I just figured it out, really, honestly and sadly. We gave them a cultural pass because they're Asian. We gave them a pass. If it was a couple of white guys who were college educated, we would have said, why didn't you get your kid counseling? Instead, it's a quiet cultural pass.
Well, it's interesting because you say that, because I do believe that that's what happened with the roommates, because I listened carefully to the roommates' interviews, and they said, you know, after speaking to him for a dozen times and he didn't speak and he always looked at the floor, it was almost like they didn't understand whether that was a cultural issue of not making eye contact or speaking. Yeah. And I do believe in that instance, they just kind of said, he's different. It's a cultural issue. Whether consciously or subconsciously, they do a pass.
Yeah, it's not always conscious. Sometimes it's subconscious.
I think it is
but the media gave his family a cultural pass because it's one of those.
And that's unfortunate.
Look, if the family were Jewish, it'd be like, hey, you putz. why didn't you get your kids some counseling? Because Jews go to counseling, and there's a lot of cultures that go to counseling.
Now,
but Asians, it's a shame. It's a shaming process, and no one wanted to bring it up.
Nobody wanted to bring it up.
Well, if schizophrenia is a disease, and it is, if your child was diabetic and you didn't get that child insulin, you'd be responsible.
Right, exactly.
This is why
everyone... would be neglect.
By the way, this is why everyone needs to drop their crappy culture when they come to this country, because you got a crazy guy from a culture that it's a shame. If you take the kid to counseling, it's a shame. So what do? You bring him over here, but you don't get him counseling because according to our culture, it's a shame. And then he shoots up a bunch of people who were born here.
Yeah.
Well, that is essentially
what
happened.
He got a cultural pass.
So I want you to know, Judge Hatchett, you're talking to a guy that thinks all Asians are born being able to play the violin. You need to know who you're talking to.
I'm not saying when they're born. I'm saying shortly after they're born.
I apologize.
Now, but you know, you can't say just across the board that everybody has to give up their cultural pieces.
It'd be
that's
nice.
What makes us diverse and interesting and all of that.
It's
obnoxious.
But as responsible parents, I don't care where your ethnic roots are, we have got to be clear that we've got responsibilities.
Right.
It's legally neglectful if you don't take care of a child's disease, whether it's mental or physical.
Right. We had one shot at preventing this. And I say shot. I'm no guarantee. Just one chance at preventing this.
Yeah, it was no guarantee because he may have been in counseling for 6 years for all we know, and it just didn't
work. We had an opportunity to prevent this. It wasn't the counselor's fault. He had too many caseloads. It wasn't the roommate's fault.
No.
It wasn't the girl down the hall who he made the threatening phone calls to.
It
was the parents. That was our one chance, and we never brought it up. Right. We never investigated it. And when a tragedy like this happens, the only way you can lessen a tragedy like this, because obviously no one's bringing back the 32 kids that are dead, is to somehow get a little more insight. When a plane crashes and 300 people die, it's a tragedy. But if we can figure out it's a screwjack mechanism in the tail rudder system, then it's a little less of a tragedy because another plane isn't going to go down. But we don't want to investigate that when it comes to human beings.
But, you know, you are so
on it. Get me up on that bench.
You are so on it, Adam. Listen, I'm going to, look, when we start shooting again, I'm going to have an extra chair. I'm going to pull it up and you can come in and sit with me anytime you want. But you know what?
I'm sitting on you. I'm not sitting with you.
She is adorable.
Yes. No, you sit on me. Your legs will fall asleep.
But let me tell you, you're onto something because I do think that this now has opened up a different kind of conversation because maybe a young woman who's being stalked on a college campus will think about it maybe proactively now. But I do think that we've got to push it back to parents. You know that kid has been weird. And you know he's been weird for a long time.
And nobody knows it better than his family.
Oh, yeah. Especially your mama and your dad.
And that's why I don't want to see the talking head from CNN explaining that they're victims just as well as the kids in the classroom were. Please give me a break.
They are.
Well, I've heard it over and over from the news.
They are hurt.
Of course they are.
I'm a Judge Hatchett on this.
Their
kid's dead, too. Yeah. Now, of course, they're not victims like the other people.
No, they're not victims like the other people.
But they have lost a child. They have lost a child.
They have
and
lost
we cannot
a child,
lose
and,
sight of that.
You know, it's like being Hitler's dad. You know what I mean? Not only did you lose a son that you probably loved, but he went out after killing his classmates.
Right.
You know, it's not, you don't feel as bad for the guy as you do for the poor victims, but somebody loved that kid.
Listen,
kid's dead.
I knew Gary Hitler well. I don't know what his dad's name was, but it'd be funny if it was Gary. All right, we need to take a break. What was Hitler's dad's name?
Gary.
Just go to Heinrich and just get done with this.
Gary today.
Gary Hitler.
Now Gary.
Judge Hatchett, everybody. Glenda A. Hatchett, Judge Hatchett. Syndicated. Check judgehatchett.com. Baby, your breath of fresh air.
Thank you. I love being here. I'd love to come back. You all need to come to New York. And come into my studio. Wouldn't
that
be great?
I will sit
Love
on
that.
Your bench any day of the week, baby.
You all should broadcast one morning.
He can do whatever the hell he wants. I'm not stepping into a court until I'm dragged again.
He's bored.
You know, I went to Phoenix to my little brother's wedding.
I'll bring you to the front door, not the back door.
I always come through the front door. I leave through the back door. I hate that. I went to my little brother's wedding, and he got married in a courtroom. And a judge that had sentenced me married them.
know. Well, the law of large numbers.
I loved your skipping story this morning.
Thank you very much.
Hitler's dad, by the way, not Gary, as once suspected by me. Alois? Crazy name.
That's
anyway.
Why the man only had one testicle, because he had a girl's name.
We need to take a break. When we come back, better late than never, Music Monday on a Tuesday, and fittingly, hangover songs from Cinco de Mayo. So, worst and best songs to hear when you're hungover next on a Music Monday.
To the Adam Carolla Show, where it's a Music Monday, this time on Tuesday. We're doing the best and worst hangover songs of all time. So you went out and tied one on last night. Your alarm is going off at 6 a.m. And what's the best song that can come on? And what's the worst? Adam, Danny, and Teresa have theirs. Call 866-901-ADAM. It's the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, hungover for Monday, a little Tuesday Music Monday. We decided to go with our Cinco de Mayo theme since a lot of people were hungover come Sunday.
By the way, I'd like to make sure that everybody knows as a public service announcement that not being hungover at all on Uno, Dos, Tres, Cuatro, Cinco, Seis de Mayo, when I woke up on Seis de Mayo feeling 100%, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Please keep drinking. It's a horrible mistake I've made sobering up. I don't wish it upon you. I think you did the right thing. And if you can play Hungover Music Monday today, you're making the right call.
I concur wholeheartedly.
My public service announcement is don't stop drinking if you can handle your liquor. If you happen to wake up with a cactus or, you know, you wake up and you're at Robert Downey Jr.'s house naked and he's smiling, maybe, like me, you need to quit. But if you can just drink and barf and hangover, you keep it up. It's worth it.
Listen, I agree.
Thank you.
I've said this about many things in my life. The reason I will not spin out with them is because I enjoy them too much. It's sort of that way with junk food or anything that's bad for you. Junk food is great until you eat it for 3 squares a day, and then you have to knock it off.
Right.
All right.
You know, one has cost me more trouble than the other out of everything I've ever been addicted to, and I refuse. I will never give it up. I have put myself in more danger or lost my family or income or whatever over women. Than any other thing in the world. You know, dipping your ink, dipping your pen at the company ink or whatever that thing is.
Yeah. Right.
A bazillion times. So that's an addiction I refuse to give up.
Yeah, they always warn you about humping people you work with.
I've never, but, aside from Teresa, I have never not slept with the guy I work with.
Not heard any complaints from Bald Brian. I think I've said enough. Let's keep let's keep going with Music Monday. These are, again, the alarm goes off after a heavy night of drinking. It's 6 a.m. It's set to a radio station. I'm going to start first with the song I don't want to hear. I like the song. I just don't want to hear this song. Nice. Little band called Ween. I might start heaving.
Something else might come up.
Yeah. Push the little bile and make it come up.
Now, having just said what I said about sex addiction, I'm not positive I can do it to this song.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not positive I could, and I'm willing to check if you want. But this was awesome.
Brian, you up for the test?
Now, the good news is,
oh my God,
when your clock alarm goes off at 6 a.m., there's probably only a 30 or 40% chance this song will be playing.
Right.
93, never charted, by Ween, everybody. Push the Little Daisies. All right, now one I would like playing, because what you want is no sound when you're hungover.
Right.
But this is a sound that could even be better than no sound. Little Enya for you. You put tequila in ya, now it's time for a little Enya.
Pretty sure right after I shoot the Daisy Lady, I'm shooting in ya. Even if I just shot in ya, I'm shooting in ya.
I know I sound like a puss, but I feel this might calm my stomach a little bit.
They play it a lot during massages.
That's right.
Not where I go.
Do it. Come on.
It's specific note from the boss.
Oh.
All right. That's one I would like to hear. Now, back again to one I wouldn't want blaring through the clock alarm when it went off at 6 a.m. Palestinian call to prayer. Face the toilet toward Mecca.
You know what's weird? If you're a good Muslim, you might blow yourself up, but you'll never hear that song hungover.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're not boozing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, before I yell at it from good Muslims, that is obviously not what I meant. I'm not extreme.
After about 10 minutes of this, I'd be ready to strap on the vest and head over to Sparrow's Pizza.
Dude, I have one of those weight vests that you put on so you'll weigh 20 to 80 pounds heavier to, you know, make you work harder. And you could not look more like a suicide bomber in it. I've decided never to wear it again. I'm bright red hair. And people are like, get away from the guy in the big golden vest.
Yeah, this music is...
Chinese opera we played the other day. That'd be scary.
Yeah, that'll make you angry too. Yeah, so not that. Again, there's no station out here, or if there is, there's only three or four of them that are dedicated to playing Palestinian calls to prayer
full
time.
The problem is, two of them were beating us
full time. We're behind three Spanish-speaking stations and four Palestinian calls to prayer stations. Other than that, we're
killing.
Spent listening is through the roof on the Palestinian call to prayer station, but we're beating their women 18 plus.
No, because
we're literally beating them.
Yes.
I think the gate's open to go after Mark and Brian and Kevin and Bean as soon as we beat Ahmad Muhammad.
Yes.
I think as soon as we beat that guy, then we're on our way.
In their morning jihad. All right.
Well, I like it. I like the Adam Carolla in the morning jihad. I like it a lot.
What do you got, baby doll?
Okay, this is a good song to hear when you're hungover. And I think this is the most lyrical and poignant description of a Sunday morning when you wake up hungover. It was written by Kris Kristofferson. This is Johnny Cash.
Morning, with no way to hold my head, that didn't hurt.
You know this one?
Yeah.
And the beer
so,
I had, I'm an American.
Different than my, different direction than my Enya route. Which I recommend we all travel.
By the way, the Enya
route is the sort of on the nose route, which is this is one that sort of relishes the fact that you went out.
Yeah, you don't feel as alone.
Boosted it up, right?
Johnny
Misery
Cash
loves company. Yeah, he's hungover worse than you. Yeah, there's nothing that'll ease your hangover faster than one of your buddies who's feeling worse than you.
Do you know what Jack Silver, our boss, told me yesterday about that?
Huh.
He's going to come in today and give us a State of the Union, and he said, I won't tell you anything in advance. I'm going to tell all the troops. It's no bad news, except, did you know a lot of people like you because they feel better because they're not you? They actually wrote that down.
It gets me out of bed in the morning.
They just feel better about themselves that they're not me.
T, give me your bad one.
Okay, are you familiar with the style of music called crunk?
Yes.
Even the sound of it, it's onomatopoetic. They say it's a combination of crazy and drunk or chronic and drunk when you're high and drunk. It's a type of hip-hop.
Uh-huh.
But it's generally involving repetitive drum loops and hoarse cries. Let's take a listen to Who You Wit by Lil Jon. And by the way, it will just go on and on just like this.
By the way, a question I have asked 1,000 times when I woke up hungover.
Who You Wit?
And you look over and just go, please, just don't be covered in fur. Just be a person and I'll be happy.
Yeah, this would be very grating.
It only usually it'll play the same drum loop.
You don't want the thumping bass line when you're hungover.
Yeah.
All right.
There's another one called What's Your Species? I hate waking up for that one, too.
Danny, give me your good hungover and then your bad.
All right. Now, you know, I have to do such soul searching for this stuff. You know, I mean, I really wanted to play, but since we said songs, I really wanted to play Police Scanners. Because that's the worst possible sound to wake up to. No, actual Scanners. That means you're in the joint. You woke up.
You actually hear the desk. Scanners.
Yeah, that's the worst. But I went, I think you'll like the way I went. Let's go with, one hit it. This is Massive Attack Teardrop.
Mm-hmm.
The It's charted to number 10 in the UK.
What was their Massive Attack had a hit, and I can't think of which one it was.
I'm actually waiting them to have one in my chest.
Massive Asthma Attack.
This would just be...
Yeah.
It's pretty.
It's mellow. Soothing.
Plus, you know how when you're hungover, you sometimes don't think you can do certain things?
Uh-huh.
I could still think, wow, I'm glad this music is so soft. My head hurts. I bet I could do this girl. You know, you still feel like you can accomplish that.
You mean
that.
The girl you're with or the singer?
I don't really care. But I was thinking about the singer at that moment.
All right, Massive Attack, good. Now give me your bad.
Are you ready? It just goes without saying. When I say the name of the band, you'll know right off the bat. You might as well go ahead and hit it. It's the Venga Boys.
Oh,
we like to party.
Is it that day?
The old man guy.
It's not the Macarena.
No. Remember the old man that goes to Magic Mountain?
Yes. We don't like the party. Well, we like the party when the streetlights were on, but now it's 6 a.m. and I can't think. Oh, no.
There we go.
Yes.
I'm puking at some right now. Me, Ozzy, Ralphing into a Doritos bag right this second.
Oh. Goddamn, Bonaducci, you are spot on.
Yeah.
I'm going to heave.
That's the second time you've called me spot on. I like that.
I couldn't.
The other one was Pearl Jam and the cover of we're doing bad, great bands that did a bad cover. Now, and you said, we should retire the game. That's it. What, he did that one about the car crash?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Pearl Jam covered the 60s, what the hell song
was
that?
She's dead and bummed in my heart.
Last Kiss. Right.
Yeah.
Last Kiss,
and now this one. Oh, so often. My head is screaming. I'm mad at the chick that I just slept with. You do me the biggest favor of my life, not only 15 minutes ago. Now I hate her.
All right, I'm going to go put my finger down my throat and heave up the morning's coffee. We need to take a break. Music Monday on a hungover Tuesday, fresh off the Cinco de Mayo.
Calls?
Yeah, we'll talk to you. Give us your best and your worst hangover songs. I have my best and worst, and I don't know that you're going to do better than my worst. It is so awful, so grating, so annoying. That was bad. I promise you worse next on the Adam Carolla Show.
More hangover songs on Music Monday. Call 866-901-ADAM. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Hangover songs, y'all. Let's see. Good and bad. Let's keep this going because Elliot Yameen is now arriving in the studio. He's going to perform. Maybe we'll get his... best and worst hangover song, too. And we'll talk to you at 866-901-ADAM. Let's see. You guys have your number one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number one good.
Yeah.
Number one good. Yeah. I have my number one good. I'll play you my number one good right now. But I'm holding back my number one bad just because I like going out on bad. So I'm going with my number one good. This is a genre of music. Steel guitar for it. Because I would think I was hallucinating if I heard this music and I was just hungover as I've been before.
Nah, I hallucinate a lot. Usually on Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
But they can play this. That makes sense on the hologram deck.
Yeah, I think I would just feel like I fall asleep on a raft and drifting out to sea.
It's not bad.
It's horrible music, don't get me wrong. It's just not obnoxious, horrible music.
It's associated with pleasantries.
I've seen some pretty bad fights over steel guitars. But, you know, I've seen bad fights over it. But, no, this is Do You Know Injury. You know, it's because it was so hard not to choose Jimmy Buffett.
Right.
You know, for everything about hangovers. That's his whole life. Is, right. You're on a boat, life is good. You know, this, I would have never thought of this. But when you put me on the raft, I went with you.
All right. Well, hop on the raft, T.
Yeah.
And speaking of you, T, what is your number one hangover song? This is what you'd want to be playing through your clock alarm at 6 a.m. after a good night of drinking on Cinco de Mayo.
All right. Well, alcohol, as you know, is a depressant.
Mm-hmm.
And I already tend towards that area.
To the people who are around me.
Right.
Yeah.
I drink, they get depressed.
So that's why this is my number one good song, because you could wake up sitting in bed, wondering where it all went wrong, thinking about all the stupid things you said, sitting around in your own filth. Mm-hmm. And if you heard this song, wow, you would have to get up.
It's like a song
you can lend a hand.
You too.
For grace. It's a beautiful day.
Motivating. Positive.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day. Go do something with
right.
it. Put your finger down your throat, hack up last night's festivities, right. and then get moving, Missy.
Move on.
Okay. I can dig it.
See,
positive.
I can dig it, but what I didn't get, like I got on the raft with Adam on this one. I'm the real life deal. Like, I'm not the joke alcoholic. I'm the wake up in strange place. You know, I made funny jokes right. about it. It was horrible, or I wouldn't have quit. And it's a beautiful day. If I woke up, and this has absolutely happened, I've told this story half a dozen times. I woke up in a phone booth with no pants and my teeth knocked out, covered in blood. And if that bastard came on singing It's a Beautiful Day, as soon as I got whatever bones were broken healed up, I'd track down Bono and beat him to death.
It wasn't best blackout song.
Well, see, when you gotta, you want to talk hangovers and you want to talk with me at the same time.
Talking
we're talking at different levels.
All right, Danny, give us your number one hangover song, what you'd want playing.
All right, this is, you know, because I take this very seriously because you do. Sure. I don't just go pick a song and say, this is the one I want. I ask around. I actually do research. So I must admit I was helped on this one.
Ah.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
It is Doobie Gray, Drift Away.
Doobie Gray.
Yes, that's
what but Doobie be better named.
I know. I do love this song.
I'll give it to you, buddy. I love this song.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll do the emotional. What the heart?
Yeah.
I've always liked this. They just did somebody, Uncle Cracker, do a cover.
Yes.
Yes. And he didn't do a bad job. He didn't do a great job. But it's again, it's if I got on the raft, you know, drift away.
Yeah.
All right. I can dig it.
I dig it.
Now I'll give you the number one song, and I challenge anyone to beat this, baby. I don't think you're going to do better than this.
You challenge the call? Is that
I challenge the callers okay. to beat this song in terms of...
If you do it, I'll give you $10.
Now, I'm not saying worse, better, whatever. Just what you don't want to hear, what you couldn't tolerate. It's 6 a.m. You got to hit the ground running. You were drinking all night. You turned up your clock alarm because you went to bed loaded and were worried
right.
you would ignore it. So you turn it up to 9. And here's what you heard.
I'm showing you that door. I got it.
When I went to bed hungover, these were live people in my house that I was drinking with, talking
oh,
like this.
Oh, these
no,
are
I mean, these,
like
are, these are what I drank with.
It's a combination of the yelling and the record scratching.
Ugh. Yeah, and now you gotta play Rainbow. Except for the fear of the bang sound.
You
just have to push a bullet into your head manually.
Is he going to sing I Ain't Gotta Have Faith again?
Oh,
I
my
think
God.
So. I have faith.
I since I put it out there, it's not $10,000. It's $10. Because right. I don't make Corolla money.
Right.
And my wife's about to take half of the Corolla money, so I only make Cook money.
Give away $5.
Yeah, so no, I'm going to give $10. If you could beat him.
If you're going to do better, we're going to hang out until he yells, I got to have faith again.
And you're, to, by the way, you're the judge.
Just to drive that
point home. But I'm showing you that door. I got to have faith. Got to have faith. Got
to have faith. Got to have faith.
Get the
f*** off. Wait a minute. Did he yell get the F up at that point? All right. Well, wait a minute. Maybe that's... All right. It's enough. Oh, did Limp Bizkit suck?
I
all
wish
you posers that love them should all bury your heads and
yes.
grow like an onion in the ground, you pussy posers. God, did they suck.
Plus, he ripped that off from Oscar Wilde. It's not right.
All
get
right,
the F up.
Let's talk to some of you out there. Let's see. Wild. We got Rick from Las Vegas. Oh, we don't have line one?
No.
All right. Rick?
Hey, I'm here.
Hey, Rick. We don't have your song, so I'm hanging up on you. He had Riders on the Storm, by the way, by the Doors. I guess that's a good one to wake up
to. You know what? You know what you're doing there? In my opinion, we're picking songs that are kind of okay, and no matter what condition you're in.
Yeah.
That particular song, Riders on the
Storm. That's depressing. I don't want to hear that if I'm hungover.
Either way, it doesn't meet it. It doesn't meet my minimum requirements for being a good hangover song or a bad hangover song. It barely meets my requirements as a song.
Nick?
Yeah.
What do you got from Las Vegas,
brother? Come on,
brother.
Nick.
Actually, this one would relate to Danny a little bit because I know he kind of likes classic rock. It's Life's Been Good by Joe Walsh. And that, for me, it kind of makes you either want to grab a beer immediately and start the hangover process all over again.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? This is a great song, my friend.
Yes, right on.
Hey, Nick?
Yeah.
From Las Vegas?
Yeah.
We just got some numbers back from Las Vegas, and it turns out we're number one in Las Vegas.
Wow.
You know what? Everyone I know here, Adam, tunes you in every day, man. I mean, they totally love you guys down here.
Well, I would like to thank you, and I'd like to put a pox on all those from San Diego that's made us number 26. Behind
the Palestinian
prayer channel.
Well,
four of them.
I'm going to change some of that. I'm going to San Diego today, right?
Please, see if you can get us up into the top 25.
But number one in
Vegas. Disc jockey.
Number one in Vegas, everybody.
Vegas, thank you,
Las Vegas.
I always say this. You know, the difference between me and the gutter I used to listen to and live in are the people that listen to this show. That's the only difference. I haven't changed. Thank you very much for keeping me out of the factories.
That's right. We're like, Danny's like the president when he says, my employers, all 300 million of them, the citizens of the United States, who are not welcome on my lawn or they'll be shot.
Actually,
it's a weird thing when your employer, when your boss can't come to your house without getting shot by a guy on your roof.
Actually, the thing we did at the Ducks, I had the winners meet me at my house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I always do.
Well,
I can tell in 2 seconds on the phone if they're crazy.
He's the president with no Secret Service, everyone. Let's do one more before we take a break. Jeff? Jeff, turn your radio down.
On right now.
Please don't be from Las Vegas.
Give us your hangover song. First off, is it good or bad?
It's good. Cheap Sunglasses by ZZ Top.
I've never been more disappointed in a caller. That's all right.
How about Sunglasses at Night, Coney Heart?
Wow. I would quit if one of our callers suggested that.
I worked with you a Love Line for 3 years. I know you've been more disappointed in callers.
Maybe you're right. Guys, like, I'm currently effing a squirrel. All right. Okay, to each your own.
I've worked with you for 4 months. You've been more disappointed in me.
This is all right. I'm just saying.
All I'm saying
this is not a great example of a good or bad hangover
song. As far as I'm concerned, so this is in the category of Riders of the Storm. It's the worst song.
It is, I don't know what letter in the alphabet it would be, probably an L, but we're looking for A and Z. We're not looking for the ones in the middle. Give me a B or give me something closer to Z, but don't give me something in the middle. All right, I'm disgusted with all of you. Now we're taking a break. Elliot Yameen.
You've been told.
He's got a debut album. He is obviously from American Idol. What did he make it into the top four last year?
Yeah, he did
year?
Very
top
well.
Three. Top three. Last year. They didn't think he could, but he showed them all. He'll be in next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Back to The Adam Carolla Show from last year's American Idol.
Elliot, so check it out, man. I love you. You are dope. You would have bombed tonight.
In my opinion, you are one of the best male vocalists we've ever had.
You move me. You celebrate what this competition is all about, and you've moved me from the beginning, but you are an American Idol.
They all loved him, and we hope you will, too. Elliot Yameen on The Adam Carolla Show.
Good to meet you, Elliot.
Great to meet you guys. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on the show. So you were the little train that could last year. No one thought you'd make it into the top 10. You made it down to the final 3, and then what? You went on tour?
Yeah, they took the top 10 finalists on tour, and we did 60 cities around the summer, over the summer last summer.
And how does it work? I'm sure you guys all do a performance together, but does it go on, if you were the 10th person, then you go on first, and it goes in sort of reverse numerical order until you get to the American Idol?
Dude, it's 9:21 in L.A., and you're asking a rock star math questions.
Numerical order?
It's too early to figure all that out, man.
Okay, here's a rock star question. How many 8-balls in an hour?
How many 8-balls in an ounce?
Wow. This guy can't do anything right now.
Two?
I don't know. Four.
We hear eight. Bill, the board ops. Eight.
The producer just yelled eight. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, Elliot went on tour, Adam, with your girlfriend, Catherine McPhee.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
How hot is she in person? I'm into her. She doesn't know it either, but we are.
She doesn't know it either. She's gorgeous. She's really gorgeous in person. She's very beautiful. She has a beautiful voice, and she actually went on... Second, I was the third to last. So I guess it kind of did go in the order in which we were kicked off or booted off the show.
Yeah, you know, right. I was going to say this earlier, and it comes up now, so it might not sound like quite the compliment because we're talking about how pretty this chick is. But I thought one of the things that made you seem so appealing to me was it seemed like you were the only real guy on the show. Like nobody, including the judges, represents guys.
Oh yeah, okay.
You know that I'm gonna get there, and I happen to be a guy like today, and your trucker hat, and your shirt, and your jeans. You're not shaving, and I'm gonna sing. You know, like guys don't think you got to be this metrosexual guy. You got to be Sanjay. You just got up there and represented guys who want to rock, and I dug that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really. I still feel like the same person. I haven't changed a bit, and I'm not too metro.
No, dude.
What
no,
were you
not.
Doing? What were you
you're
doing not. A year and a half ago or 2 years ago?
I was selling drugs, actually, back home.
Really? I knew you.
See? Really?
So, I should have been able to answer the 8-ball question a lot quicker. No, I was bagging up prescriptions at a local pharmacy back home in Richmond, Virginia, and just ringing people up. Counter clerk, you know, really didn't have much going on in my life.
And when did American Idol come to your town, or did you travel to American Idol?
No, I traveled to them. The closest audition city to my hometown last season was in Boston, actually. So I ran in the car. My girlfriend at the time and I ran in the car and drove 12 and a half hours to Gillette Stadium in Boston, where I waited outside for 3.5 hours in the torrential downpours.
You and 10,000 other hopefuls?
That's right, man.
That's
yeah.
a close shift. Wow.
I got up there and I saw those people. I didn't think there was a chance in hell I was going to be able to get, you know, even get heard. But
is the audition process like what we see when they do the audition shows at the beginning of the season?
No, it really isn't. They show glimpses of it. The initial process is basically like one big cattle call. You know, they have a big arena or a big, you know, big stadium.
Right.
And it's just a free for all. You show up, you show them your ID, they give you a little bracelet, and you hurry up and wait. Like this whole business is kind of predicated on.
Who sees you initially? Like
initially
when you first sung, who was it to?
It was for production assistants, PAs, as we in the business like to call it, PAs.
Yeah. I know. We like to call them the functionally retarded. Those people are going to decide your future.
Right, yeah. Your hands kind of, your future kind of hangs in their hands. And basically what they did was they set up like 12 tents on the field, uh-huh. football field. Mm-hmm. And you sit in the seats and they call you by rows and you go four deep. It's like four here, four in back of you. So they... Actually, it's eight deep, and you're just kind of side by side people, and they ask you to step forward and sing whatever you're going to sing. You give them your name, your age, where you're from, and what you're going to sing, and then you sing. And what's funny is you hear everybody else around you singing most of the people very badly.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to tune those guys out.
But you literally have 12 seconds to make your point. I mean, you don't get to sing a song. You sing a few notes, right?
No, they let me kind of kick my song all the way to the kind of the hook.
What
was it?
It was a song for you by Donny Hathaway. So,
well, relive that for a second. Your name is called. You're in a crowd. You step forward. By the way, Bonaduce, could you imagine how you would abuse that power?
Yes.
You're like, hey, listen, you number 3, number 13, and number 69. I'm going to need to pull you girls out of line. Come back to my private tent. No, that's actually a van, but here's the point.
I would laugh if this weren't so true.
You want to pass the audition?
Dude, when I was on the
Step
station,
up to the microphone.
Can I get arrested for this? It's 10 years later.
We're
on in Philly. Like, we'd be giving away a trip to Hawaii, and I'd know a really hot girl.
Of course.
I'd set something up. and I'd already have her on the phone. Nice. All right, we're going to take car number 10. Hi, what's your name? Veronica. Well, you're going to Hawaii.
Right.
I
need to do a remote with you, man.
Yeah, you do. Nice, good one.
So, Elliot, give us a week. They call your name.
Yep.
You are in a crowd, a group of people. You just take one step forward, like you're in the military, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And you like belt out this song. Oh, I'm not going to sing it for you, Elliot.
Oh, I thought you were going to play something. All right. So I step up and I say, crickets. Yeah. I step up and I say, hi, my name is Elliot. I'm 27 years old and I'm from Richmond, Virginia. And I'm going to sing a song for you by Donny Hathaway. And then they say, okay, go ahead whenever you're ready. And then I said, I've been so many places in my life and times. I've sung a lot of songs, and I made some bad rhymes. I've acted out my life on stages with 10,000 people watching. But we're alone now, and I'm singing this song to you.
All right, that's great. Beautiful. Yummy. Oh, you're making it to the next round. Oh, by the way, every chick here named Brittany needs to come to the courtesy van right now.
Calling all Britneys.
But all the Stephanies also go to the courtesy van.
So that then gets you to the next level. So now they make a little mark on their clipboard, right? Or how does it work?
They kind of like concurred with one another as far as their decisions. Actually, I just got a text from my buddy Norm Betts, who was the first guy I sang for on the field there. And he just corrected me. He said they're producers, not production assistants. So I'm sorry, Norm.
Right.
I didn't mean to offend you. But anyways, the producers.
PR. Yes.
Yeah. Or underling is fine.
Right.
But anyways, the producers said, very nice, Elliot. Very nice. Right. And then stepped back, and they let the other three people in the line step forward and do their thing, and then afterwards they concur with each other and see who they like, and they just kind of tell whoever they like to step forward, and they give you a golden, kind of a golden ticket, and, and then you proceed to
Willy Wonka's house
to walk through. Yeah, it's well, like,
I'm chiming in because Elliot Yamin is here from American Idol. He's going to be at the Irvine Verizon Amphitheater coming up Saturday, May 12th. He's going to sing live for us as well.
Which is very
cool. I think we'll do that next break because I'm very interested, and I think a lot of people are, in the process.
Yeah.
So now, out of the thousands of people out at Gillette Stadium, which is where the Patriots play, right?
Right, right.
You then get your golden ticket. You've made it through the first gate. Obviously, you haven't seen Simon and company yet. What's the next move? Does it go on that day, or is it a month later?
No. The next move is you go through the players' tunnel. They set you up in this office, and you begin to start signing your life away, actually.
Now, how many people are there, approximately?
I'm not sure. Maybe a few hundred, maybe.
There's nobody else out of that crop that made it into the top 20, though, right?
Yeah, actually, there was.
There was.
You remember the guy they kind of dubbed as Chicken Little, Kevin Covas?
Yes.
Oh, little guy with glasses. He actually auditioned in Boston, I believe, too.
But even the chances of that are very, very slim. So he's in the same. There's a couple hundred people, and now where do you go?
Well, we go back, like I said, we go in this room, we start signing our lives away, and then we get a piece of paper that says, okay, return back to the Seaport Hotel, which is one of the hotels right on the harbor there in Boston.
It's nice.
It is nice. Yeah, and they asked us to come back like 3 days later. So we go back 3 days later.
So they thin the herd from thousands to a couple hundred.
To hundreds, right.
And they say, meet us at the hotel
Hotel in a few days. Come on back. So we did. And that round, you actually auditioned for the executive producers of the show, Nigel Lithgow,
right.
Ken Warwick, and there's a bunch of other people in the room, camera guys and so forth.
You do the same song?
You're allowed to do whatever you want, but right. I kind of, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I just kind of stuck with what got me there in the first place. So I proceeded to sing that song again. They made their comments and got another gold ticket. And now that
group of a few hundred gets whittled down to what, approximately?
Well, probably a few hundred. There was probably more than a few hundred there. Mm-hmm. But and then they narrow it down to maybe, I don't know, maybe 150, 200 people. And
this is taking place all over the country. So obviously right. your competition is everyone in the room and then everyone at the stop
literally,
before and after you.
A million to one shot yeah. doesn't actually cover it.
No, it's probably
yeah,
more. Elliot Yamin is here from American Idol. We need to take a break. When we continue, we'll not only hear live from Elliot, who will be playing for us, but we'll continue the journey because yeah. I'm fascinated by this. Elliot Yamin and his story next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Welcome back to the Adam Carolla Show. And now, Scores presents Strip Club Etiquette with the Deaf Frat Guy. Today's topic, the two-drink minimum.
It's considered to be in poor taste to not purchase drinks at the establishment. So if you're on a budget, you might want to consider ordering a cola and bringing your own hip flask. It's cheaper and classy.
That was Strip Club Etiquette, brought to you by Scores and the Deaf Frat Guy. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Elliot Yamin in studio. All the
way. Deaf Frat Guy. I love that guy.
I love the Deaf Frat Guy,
funny.
Too. Could only get him to love himself. Elliot Yamin came in third place. He was second runner-up. As well, I grew up a pageant.
Second,
right?
Second loser.
Second loser on American Idol. So again, the journey. You start off in a football stadium. You narrow it down to a couple hundred people. You show up at the hotel. They make the cut again. Mm-hmm. Now you get your second gold ticket. And then what? How long before you go up in front of the panel?
Well, about a month and a half. They,
really?
Yeah, they tell you to go home and do not speak a word of this to anybody. They keep a pretty, they try to keep a pretty good, you know,
right.
tight gag order on everybody because they don't like information getting
sure.
out and whatnot. And so I went home and we have a big, big Jewish family. So we all love to talk and I tell one person, next thing you know, the whole family and then the whole city of Richmond knows.
Sure.
Sooner than later. But anyways, you know, went home and then came back, to Boston. To the same Seaport Hotel.
6 weeks later.
Like 6 weeks later, right? And that's where we got to finally meet.
They tell you to wear the same clothes you were wearing? Because it always looks like one day.
They did, yeah. They definitely told us to keep our appearance keep our appearance the same as much as possible and just to kind of make it look like it, the whole thing took place in one day.
So they send the recon division out ahead of the generals. They do the scouting. They go ahead and round up the troops. And then 6 weeks later, the generals show up on a private plane and they set up and now they judge. So you then go in front, at that point, is when you go in front of Randy and Simon and Paula, right?
Right.
Now, let me ask one question here. Has anybody, for no reason, been rude to you at this point?
From the show, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Like a PA, because I found when I was, like, auditioning for things that could change your life.
Right.
That the power structure changes the second they give it to you.
Right.
If you're the guy that gets the job and you're the star of the movie
yeah.
and you're just begging at first, within a split second, they've got all the power in the world to know you're the star. Did anybody treat you like that? Like, let me keep you down till I can't anymore?
No, man. You know, everybody, I really enjoyed working with everybody on the show. They were all, everybody is just such a family. And I know it sounds so cliche, but everybody is, works together and everybody's great, really friendly. They all help each other out and they just really want to see everybody succeed. So, I've never been, had any problems with anybody or no one was ever rude to me.
So now because there's 6 weeks to think about it, obviously you're anticipating this.
Yeah.
Your family knows about it because you're loud mouth.
Right.
Told to be quiet, but you couldn't stop flapping them lips.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now everyone knows about it and they're all anticipating it. But are they trying, is your family saying, you know, manage your expectations a little, like, look, honey, don't expect to be going off to Hollywood?
No, not really. I mean, I think everybody is close to me. They were aware of my talent, I guess. Maybe mm-hmm. more aware than my own self, really. I really had nothing to lose, so nobody was really saying. There were a few people that I told that, hey, I made it to Hollywood. I'm going on the show. You know, I'm going to be on the show. You know, whether I make it this far or not,
right.
you'll see me on TV. And
so
I got some people that shrugged me off. Were like, yeah, okay, kid.
You go
yeah.
to audition. They give you the thumbs up. They say you're going to Hollywood. And then how long after that do you actually go to Hollywood?
Let's see. We got to Hollywood on February 2nd, and then that was like a little, probably about another month.
About another month
after that. So maybe a little longer.
You go home just just riding on a cloud nine.
Yeah.
You pack your bags.
I went home and told everybody to kiss off, man.
Everybody you've ever met to kiss your hairy ass. Exactly.
Because I've never known anything else, but my wife noticed. She went to she was raised in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you from Chattanooga?
I went to school in Chattanooga.
Yeah. Hickson High School, by any chance? My wife went to Hickson High.
Danny, talking to the one person that doesn't have a microphone.
That's okay. You want to do more Huell Howser for me, buddy?
All right.
So, anyway, I noticed, and she noticed, that sometimes she'd say, what we're doing, well, Danny's hosting a show in Australia, so we'll be there for a week, and then we're going to go to New York and do Letterman, and then we're coming home. 9 out of 10 of her friends thought, that's so cool. But there were some friends thought, I don't like you anymore. You
know, right, yeah.
You're just telling me about your life, but it comes off showing off. Did people, were there any of your friends that you liked that thought they didn't wish you well, that weren't that happy for you?
You know, there are a few, I wouldn't call them really friends to begin with, but there were some acquaintances that I knew that I guess kind of turned their envy feelings into jealous feelings, I guess. Not to the extreme, but... You know, you can definitely feel that kind of energy coming from people, and I felt that here and there from a few people, but for the most part, 99.9% of the people were real supportive and got behind me, and, you know, the whole state, the whole city was just...
Are you running for office? Would you just tell me somebody sucks at something and make my day, please?
Why don't we just let him sing?
This is my candidacy.
Eh? Well, now I'm worried that we suck at time management because...
I'm sorry.
You've got the guitar and everything.
I know.
Frosty Heidi Frank get real pissy when we run live.
They get angry. But it's Elliot Amin. Yeah, I don't know.
This is radio.
He just sings right now.
All right, sing, but like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
By the way, Elliot Amin's self-titled debut album is out and debuted at number 3.
All right, let's hear a song off it. What are we going to hear, Elliot?
This is going to be the first single from my debut record. It's called Wait For You. And by the way, my tour starts May 17th.
We'll be there.
So, here we go.
I never felt nothing in the world like this before. Now I'm missing you and I'm wishing you would come back through my door. Ooh, why did you have to go? You could have let me know. So now I'm all alone. Girl, you could have stayed, but you wouldn't give me a chance. With you not around, it's a little bit more than I can stand. Ooh. And all my tears, they keep running down my face. Why did you turn away? So why does your pride make you run and hide? Are you that afraid of me? But I know it's a lie, what you're keeping inside. That is not how you want it to be. So baby, I will wait for you. Cause I don't know what else I can do. Don't tell me I ran out of time. If it takes the rest of my life, I'll wait for you. It's been a long time since you called me. Baby, you've gotta be feeling crazy. Ooh, how can you walk away? Everything stays the same. I just can't do it, baby. What will it take to make you come back? Girl, I told you what it is, and it just ain't like that. No. Why can't you look at me? You're still in love with me. Don't leave me crying. Baby, why can't we just start over again? Get it back to the way it was. If you give me that chance, I can love you right. But you're telling me it won't be enough. So baby, I will wait. I don't know what else I can do. Don't tell me I ran out of time. If it takes the rest my life. So why does your pride make you run and hide? Are you that afraid of me? But I know it's a lie, what you're keeping inside. That is not how you want it to be. So baby, I will wait for you.
That was my buddy Russell Ali accompanying me on
Russell
guitar.
Ali Russell with Ali. A nice assist on the acoustic guitar. We need to take a quick break.
Hot chick from Hickson.
Elliot is going to be live at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater coming up Saturday, May 12th. Take a quick break. Be right back. It's enough time to thank those who deserve it. Glenda Hackett. Hatchett. Judge Hatchett. JudgeHatchett.com is where you go. Also, Larry the Cable Guy, Delta Farce, in theaters this Friday. If you're a fan of the PBS series Upstairs, Downstairs, you're going to love Delta Farce with Larry the Cable Guy. Get her done. And, of course, Elliot Yameen singing like a lark in studio. Verizon Wireless Amphitheater in Irvine this Saturday. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla saying mahalo. It's like, hey, nice job handling the bags. Here's a Quaalude.